It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy, Renee, and Alex are all here, and there's nothing to talk about, which means, of course, we're going to go on for hours. Stay tuned. A great Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 466, recorded Tuesday, August 4th, 2015. We're all edge cases now. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. And by lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit lynda.com/MacBreak. That's lynda.com/MacBreak. And by LegalZoom. Protect your family with a last will or living trust today. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but can connect you with an independent attorney. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW in the referral box at checkout for your special discount. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news with the Apple experts. Alex Lindsay's back joining us from Pittsburgh. He's, of course, at thepixelcore.com and at Alex Lindsay on the Twitter. Hi, Alex.
Hey.
Nice to see you.
It's good to be here.
Also with us, of course, Renee Ritchie from imore.com, at Renee Ritchie on Twitter. Good to see you in Montreal.
Thank you, Leo. Alex looks so perfect every week. It's unbelievable.
I know. But what he doesn't have, sounds a little like the Wizard of Oz, is a brain. No, what he doesn't have is Georgia Dow's little beautiful little accent panels.
Oh,
we have to get him some of those.
I'm very plain. It's very plain.
Yeah, Georgia does this cool thing. She has like, I don't know what it is, like a white.
The hue strips. The hue strips.
And then she has a canvas like you'd buy in the store, pre-stretched canvas, and she puts LED strips behind it, and so it glows under the edge, and it just gives it like this little.
Like she's coming to you from the Matrix or the grid or something.
Yeah. Yeah, see?
Oh.
Isn't that clever?
That is quite nice, I must say.
I must say?
Maybe my next studio.
Plus, she's Georgia and we're us, so I mean, it's hard to compete.
It doesn't hurt that she's Georgia Dow. Yeah. And Andy Anatko from somewhere in New England. Good to see you.
Hello, Leo.
He's probably in some town that's pronounced nothing like it's spelled, like Worcester or Gloucester.
Worcester. Leominster.
Leominster. Leominster's the worst.
Well, you know, but if you're going to get to Lowell, you've got to go through Leominster first.
How many times have I said that? There isn't a whole lot.
Got a double header this weekend.
Got to go to Fenway. We got not a lot of news because it's August. And we all are waiting with bated breath to see what September and perhaps even October brings. So most of the news in the Apple world in August is rumors. Some of them perhaps more credible because, after all, by now, Apple's surely producing an iPhone somewhere. Right?
Yeah, they haven't given it up yet. They didn't drop the mic. They didn't switch to hot tubs. They're still in the phone business.
Wouldn't that be something if they said, you know, we're going to do the next thing, and it's not a phone?
Oh, it'd be more fun if they said, we've seen the Galaxy S6. We've seen the OnePlus One. We don't think we need to come up with a new phone. We think that we're good.
We're pretty good. Okay. Yeah, the competition is not.
Edge Plus, guys, seriously, we're going to take the year off. We're gonna get some ideas. We'll be back in 2016.
We're going to take the money we were going to spend rolling this product out, and everybody who comes into the Apple store with last year's phone gets a free hat.
Do you guys think I like the Galaxy 6 Edge, and of course the Edge Plus is rumored to be what Samsung's going to announce next week along with a Note 5.
Has to be.
It probably is because, what else? But I think that's a pretty beautiful phone. You don't like it?
I think so too. We're having fun, but I have the Galaxy S6, and man, that's a nice camera.
And I love the camera.
It's beautiful because it looks a lot like the iPhone 6, which is beautiful. The only thing I don't like about it is that I think I would like to think there's a reason why Apple stopped making the back of their phones out of like slippery silicone glass. Because once again, this phone is having the same sort of relationship between the arm of my sofa and the floor that my iPhone 5 used to have. So
the Nexus 4, I think, could slide off a horizontally aligned surface.
It was funny because
in the middle of a 10-foot table and it would end up on the floor.
Google made a wireless charger for the Nexus 4 and it would, or was it the 5? Maybe it was the 5, but it would slide off every time.
Well, now that Qualcomm is doing inductive charging through metal, I think we can all look forward to a happier future.
Happy, 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 joy, joy. But that is something to be considered as an Apple watcher, is that they only do a new phone once a year. And there's a fleet of new phones coming out, probably having something to do with the fact that next month Apple will announce a new iPhone.
Everyone's trying to get ahead of that cycle.
Motorola has three new phones. OnePlus has announced the OnePlus 2. And then, foolishly, their CEO said, oh, but wait till you see the one we've got coming out later this year.
Yeah. Oh, someone's fired.
CEO Osborne, right? That was his name.
That's the Osborne effect. You don't announce a new phone when you're phone is about to be sold.
Every phone is the last phone as far as you know.
Right. Apple's really good at that, right?
Yeah, they don't believe there's going to be a next iPhone.
There'll never be a next iPhone. Buy this one. And in fact, look at their last quarter. The iPhone sold quite well, given that everybody and their brother knows that there's going to be a new one in a month.
Well, and I think that the and then you're seeing things like T-Mobile, I think, is now announcing if you get your iPhone now, they'll let you upgrade next month or in 2 months or something like that. So manufacturers are starting to get kind of ahead of that, or the cell carriers are starting to get ahead of that too. But I think that the larger one, the 6S, which I have to admit I don't, or the 6 Plus, is not something that I'm as excited about. But it's still
5.7 inches, right? I think it's Samsung saying, all right, we give up. The only phones of ours you're buying are the phablets.
Right. So the other thing is that the expensive phones seem to be mostly moving towards Apple. I think that I think the statistics are showing that, you know, Android is still owning the kind of the low end market, but the as you get over $500 or $600, those percentages keep on moving towards Apple. And I think a big jump was because they built finally this larger phone that people seem to really like.
Yeah.
The depressing numbers for me is that Samsung, you look at their earnings last week, they are making so much more money off components. Like they tried this whole mobile thing and they did pretty well for a while, but they're a business and they're looking at the kind of money they make supplying parts for Apple and the kind of money they're making or not making their own mobile devices. And you look at Microsoft and their Nokia right down, and it depresses me as a technology lover. Like I was depressed a little bit about when Android came out to begin with, because to me it was like, oh, they've made the PC of phones and now Facebook and the other companies aren't going to try to make their own operating systems. And even if they win or lose, I just want to see novel ideas come up all the time. And now we have these manufacturers.
Well, there are novel ideas coming up all the time.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, like when WebOS came out, that was like a refreshing change. And I was hoping we'd see several more of those before the market shook out.
Like global operating system ideas.
Yeah, well, just like the idea of reinventing the phone, and arguably Facebook could have done it, or another company with resources, or Amazon. Yeah. But because Android is the perfect system to use, everyone uses Android, but then they start having these, like, do we differentiate this way or that way? And then Microsoft does that.
Well, what about launchers? I mean, Facebook did Facebook Home. Microsoft has a new launcher for Android that I haven't tried, but a number of people have tried with Sideloads and say it's very interesting. I mean, that's, in a way, that's kind of what Microsoft did to computing in the 90s, provided a platform that everybody could develop to.
I just want them to be monstrously successful. Like, I want a world where Apple has fierce competition, and they're okay at competing against themselves, but in a world where there are really, really successful competitors, I think we all do
well. But wait a minute. Well, Android outsell iPhone?
But that's not a competitor. That's a platform. Like Android is like this amorphous glob that I can't really... Like, I want Samsung to be super vibrant, and LG and Nokia to be like these major competitive phones.
And the reason we keep coming back to the idea that one of the reasons why Apple does so well with the iPhone is that they don't have to compete with any other manufacturer for the iPhone. If there were 10 different people making iPhones, maybe Apple would discover that the $800 phone is not the one that people want.
It's not like others haven't tried, though. I mean,
I know.
I think you're getting competition. You're getting all sorts of creativity, all sorts of interesting ideas, and they're all throwing themselves up against Apple, and Apple is like the impermeable tower.
Wonder Woman. Ting, ting, ting,
yeah.
Ting, ting,
ting. Doom, doom, doom.
Well, I think that I think Apple does still have the 90. What do 90% of the people want to do 90% of the time? They don't want all the specialty things. I have a couple Android phones, but I still wouldn't recommend them for my parents. it's too many interfaces. It's too hard to make changes. It's way harder to do a lot of things on an Android and I use both of them, back and forth, but it is definitely something I have to rethink things over and over and over again when I do it on the Android, and simple things, And so I think that's a real challenge for them. I think a vast majority of people that are buying the lower end Android phones are not adding anything to them. It's a phone and it's got some things and that's what they use it for. And so I think that is, or they're buying it for something special. I mean, most of the phones I have are because of there's some special, a note for VR or, that type of thing. And so, but I think that Apple is very good at making it easy. That gets back to that. It just works. And I think that they have cornered that market. And I think everyone else is trying to be special, but and the other issue you get into is that, it's an OS that keeps on updating for most people, which makes it easier to develop for as well. I mean, I look at the fractional, setup of Android, and the forking that has gone on, not only forking, but just the fact that, Google has these great OS updates and they get out to 10% of the people, and that's got to get fixed, where they can start, moving forward and competing. But I don't know how you compete when a very small, tiny percentage of the overall user base sees any benefits from the OS continually being, progressing.
That's kind of a side effect of being open. That's kind of a side effect of being an open platform. If you say we're going to be open source and anybody can use this, that's what happens. Then you get the toxic hell stew. But I think
the Kmart phone.
Well, and also,
what's wrong with that? That's the side effect of that. Yeah. The other way to go, Apple's highly proprietary system. It's nice to have both.
Yes.
And there is a side effect. And by the way, we will talk a little later about how even a highly proprietary operating system can have serious security issues. So,
yeah.
Go ahead, Dan.
Also, I'm still wondering what happens now that we're in the realm where carriers, at least in the U.S., are no longer really able to trick people into thinking that their $200 phone is actually a $200 phone. Now that they're explicitly saying this is an $800 to $900 right. phone, we're just going to let you pay for it over 2 years.
Right.
And I'm wondering what happens when people start seeing that difference. And now they're in the position of saying, well, here is the Motorola G phone that cost 25% as much. Is it 25% as right. good, or is it 90% or 95%
I think
as good?
That's what happens when people learn the actual price of a phone is that Motorola, OnePlus, and others start making $300, $400 phones.
Yeah.
And actually, I think you could say the OnePlus 2, which is going to be about $400, is comparable to any $700 phone. Does this put pressure on Apple or no?
We see resellers, so. Like on iMore a lot of the time now, we see people who buy the new phone, then sell it a couple of weeks before they predict the next one will be released, right. and they get a high enough price that it only costs them $200 or $300 to buy the next big phone.
Right.
So there's various angles to this, and then the carriers rebuy phones now, and then they resell them in third world market or emerging markets.
Look what T-Mobile's doing. Basically, an iPhone costs you $15 a month, and you'll always have the latest iPhone. That's the new thing, right?
So Andy's right in that the prices are in front of us now, but people are really good at hacking those sorts of things, and they're coming up with all these sorts of novel solutions to get what they want when they want it.
Yeah, but that's the same reason. There are people who like whatever ease of use problems there might be with Android, they solve those problems too.
Yep.
It's a really I love the fact that I'm with Renee. I'm glad that there are so many different opportunities out there. I wish that there were a company saying, you know what, we're going to make a weird round phone. It is just it's the size of a ping pong ball. It's mostly control surfaces. It has one LED. Make it crazy and just let it find the 4,000 people who are going to absolutely love it. Because without that sort of differentiation, really. Android benefits from the iPhone being there. iPhone absolutely benefits from Android being there because if you have one king of the country that rules everything, you're not encouraging that person to learn and adapt and evolve and improve.
And well, I would argue.
I think that
go ahead.
I was going to say, I think the next generation is going to be getting away from any kind of hardware device that isn't, as the more I use my watch, the more I see that what you're really moving towards is this kind of embedded, some way embedded wearable kind of environment where you're not really picking up a phone very often.
I would submit we do live in a pretty creative, interesting time for phones. I do think that because Android is freely available and free, it's a little Android heavy. Here's the Turing phone, which is, I'm sure, based on Android, right, Jason Howell? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it is.
Built out of liquid metal. it is ugly ass, but it's... You can pre-order it now, and, I mean, is that not ugly ass? Am I wrong?
No, that's cool.
You like that? It's made out of liquid morphium.
Unobtainium.
Unobtainium.
I like the sharp edges. That's going to make it fun to drop on your foot.
With liquid morphium from Terminator 2, Leo? I'm losing track of that.
Apple has, actually, does Apple not own liquid metal?
Commercial usage rights to liquid metal.
Yeah, so they claim this is liquid metal, but obviously it can't be exactly.
It's like chocolatey.
It says it's liquid morphium is an amorphous liquid metal alloy tougher than titanium or steel. And, of course, this phone is all about privacy, as a number of other phones have been as well. This is the ultimate in security. You can order it now. I would wait. I think this is another one. You know, it's from Turing Robotic Industries. This is a 3D render, my friends. There's many a slip between the 3D render.
It doesn't go on a carrier network, so it's 100% secure.
Yeah. And then don't forget Project Aero, which was acquired by Google in the Motorola acquisition. They sold back Motorola, but they didn't sell back Aero. And this is a modular phone, which I think is very interesting. And it's about to be sold in, if it's not already, being sold in Puerto Rico. It's about to be sold in Puerto Rico.
Whether I want it or not, I'm happy that it exists.
Yeah, I don't want it because I feel like if I drop it, it'll go boing, and all the pieces will fly.
It's like the last Iron Man movie. Whenever Tony Stark tripped, all the armor fell off of him, so you kind of wondered how effective the armor was.
Like, mouse trap.
That's how these things work. I mean, the idea of a 6-inch phone or even like a 5-inch phone is absolutely ridiculous. And you see them, and my God, that's totally stupid. Right. Until you start to see them for 2 or 3 months, and you realize that it would kind of be nice to be able to read the whole comic strip in one screen. And then suddenly they start to filter everywhere else. So
A gold phone, everyone thought a gold phone was ugly. And then when they were sold out, people lost their minds.
I love the gold phone. Hey, can I say that the best Mac product of the year is not the phone, it's the MacBook.
Of course
and
you can.
I may be the only one who feels this way, but I love the MacBook.
It's fantastic.
I would agree with you. I think it's the most exciting Mac that Apple has done. It's certainly one of the three most exciting Macs that Apple has released. It's so forward thinking. It goes for a really specific aesthetic. It has a very specific point of view, and where it makes compromises for that point of view, it tries to soften them as much as possible. Whereas in the past, we have seen Apple do some things where it's like, we wanted this keyboard to be banana shape, and the only way to do that was to only have 14 characters on the keyboard. So that's what we did. It only has 14 characters on it. It's like, okay, thank you. It's a beautifully designed banana shape keyboard that I now absolutely can't use at all. With the new MacBook, every time they've cut something out, they say, well, here's something we did to accommodate you, knowing that it's going to be a bummer to have a flatter keyboard. We're going to redesign a new key switch so that it actually makes up for that a little bit. It's really terribly exciting.
I don't know I think if there's one flaw in the MacBook, it's that the keyboard, there's the low travel on the keyboard.
It's one thing, you're either going to get used to it or you're not. Most of the other problems here are either self-solving, like the problem of having that one USB-C.
I've bought every USB-C dongle, and I love it. I'm happy.
Yeah.
I rarely use it.
MacBook, quote, pro, unquote, is dongle central. So that's not as big a problem. The big problem was not being able to get them in the first couple of months, those USB-C adapters. But that's a self-solving problem. The CPU, to a degree, is a self-solving problem, particularly because no one's buying the super ultra-thin, ultra-light machine to do Final Cut, 4K movie editing. It's certainly capable for what you want to do. Also, it makes you think about, is there going to be an ARM chip in here in a year or two or three? Oh, that's interesting.
It's also super cool because, like, the force press touchpad, it's a kind of a cool technology now, and it makes you think physics are a lie and your fingers are a bunch of liars and all those kinds of things. But it also removes another mechanism. In a traditional trackpad, you have to have all that vertically stacked on top of each other. But with a digital mechanism, you can have the logic that supports that anywhere where there's room in the machine, and you no longer need the vertical height underneath the trackpad, which makes it thinner or gives you more space for battery. And it's all these things sort of lead you to whatever the MacBook is going to be next. And It reduces the mechanical parts, the things you can damage by dropping it, things that can mechanically fail. All these things, I think, to Andy's point, are incredibly forward-thinking. So I love that machine.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see how it turns out for the pros, you know, being someone who has a lot of retinas.
A lot of people are saying, I'm going to wait for the next MacBook because it's certainly going to be faster, better. You know, they'll use the new
Skylake. Well, like the 2011 MacBook Air versus the 2008 right. MacBook Air.
But I thought that was different because the 2011, the first MacBook Air, that was, not the 2011, but the 2008 MacBook Air was really ungodly painful to use in every single way. This was the idea of, we just wanted to build something in this shape. We don't care if it's only the shape of a computer and not an actual functioning computer. This is something where this is something more. The new MacBook is more like, we accept that it's not going to be for everybody, and most people are going to probably want to wait a year or two for the rest of the world to catch up with the things that make this design practical. But for the people that this fits for the people who find themselves traveling with an iPad and a whole bunch of accessories to make it work like a notebook, and then not being happy because it's not working really well as a notebook, those people are absolutely thrilled off their butts for this machine, I think.
Let's take a break because I want to come back and talk about maybe what the next generation MacBook would be, and Skylake, which is the new Intel processor. Ryan Shroud had a scoop on PC Perspective, a leaked packaging for Skylake. I think we're close. Some are speculating that Skylake will be kind of the heart of a new MacBook. But let's take a break. And maybe, Renee, I'm sure you're up on this. You can explain to us, what does Skylake do for us? And if it's in the offing for Apple.
It's all about MVNOs, Leo. Skylake is all about MVNOs.
That threw me. Okay. I don't know what that means, but I'll find out. It's the tick, not the talk. So we're down to 14 nanometers with Broadwell. But now Skylake is going to be a same 14 nanometer process, but improved performance. We'll talk about that, though. Hold on. First, how are you going to get all those new gadgets? I think you mentioned it. One of you mentioned it. I think, Alex, that there's always the people who wait until the kind of almost end of life of the old gadget, sell it, and now they're ready for the new gadget. That's actually a very smart strategy. And may I give you a partner in that strategy? Gazelle.com, the easy way to get a great deal when you sell and when you buy. Now, let me tell you, first of all, about selling. Gazelle, if you go there right now, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com, will give you a 30-day guaranteed locked-in quote. That, by the way, is a huge advantage right there, because especially as we get to the end of the life cycle for any device, like, let's say, the iPhone 6, the last 30 days of it, the price really starts to tumble. So get the quote now. You know a new iPhone 6 is going to come out. Maybe wait a week. I don't know. And get a quote, and then you've got that locked in for 30 days. If the new iPhone comes out, you want it, you can sell your old iPhone at the top price possible. And I think that's a real advantage. They will buy a lot of different devices, not just iPhones. By the way, they do buy broken iPhones and iPads. They'll buy tablets from Samsung, Google, Microsoft. They'll buy Apple's computers and monitors. You go to Gazelle.com, you'll see all the different things. Old iPods. You want to get the new iPod Touch? Great place to go sell the old one and get the new one. Because the best stuff that goes to Gazelle, they turn around and sell. In their buy certified program, two different qualities available, certified like new and certified good. Like new is self-explanatory. Those are really, truly like new. In fact, in most cases, they are new products people bought and said, no, I don't want this, and they sold it to Gazelle. Certified good, you'll see that somebody's used it, some gentle sign of wear, but that gives you a much better price. And here's Gazelle's guarantee. All devices have been put through their very rigorous 30-point inspection. They are 100% functional. And they're guaranteed by a 30-day risk-free return policy. So if you've broken a phone, lost a phone, if it's time to get the kids a phone, don't buy a new phone for a kid. Go to Gazelle. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. Sell your phone. Payment is fast. They'll pay the shipping. They'll wipe the data if you forget to. No wonder Gazelle's now paid out more than $200 million to over a million customers, including me. I use them all the time. And now you can buy two. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, Gazelle. Sell your gadgets and buy them too, the fast and simple way with Gazelle. We thank them for their support of Mac Break Weekly. So I'm looking at the slide for Skylake. The Intel's claiming 10 to 20% improvement in single thread performance. This is the ninth generation Intel graphics. Much better battery life. If you look at Broadwell, 8.5 hours. Skylake, they estimate 11.3 hours. Support for new forms of storage, new forms of USB for new forms of Bluetooth, Cat 6 LTE. Is this a mobile processor particularly?
They'll have a mobile version particularly. Yeah. I think that's where their business is increasingly going.
And I think the MacBook would really, I mean, 30% better battery life. Wow. This is, and one of the things people complain about, it doesn't bother me, but is the Core M processor that Apple chose for the MacBook. People say, oh, that's too slow. I don't notice that, to be honest with you, at all.
Most human tasks doesn't really need that speed anymore. It's like what happened with PCs when people stop, or with the iPad when people stop upgrading, because it does all the basic things that they do.
If Skylake's coming out now, could we see before the end of the year a new MacBook, or would that be too soon?
I mean, you never say never with Apple, because you know once in a while they pull a crazy Ivan and just spin around on you when you're least expecting it. But mostly they renew those things once a year. If you look back historically, if they stick to patterns, they typically, they'll once in a while do a processor bump, but it's the same sort of processor. It's just a speed bump, literally. And otherwise, it's a once a year thing. We already had both MacBook Airs. We had the new MacBook. The MacBook Airs went to Broadwell. The 13-inch MacBook Pro went to Broadwell, and the 15-inch went to a speed bump Tazewell. So that's a pretty good cycle for them already.
That's kind of what this article is saying. This is Mac Rumors Y Series, which is the MacBook. The Y Series would go to the MacBook, which would give it a 70% CPU bump, 41% faster graphics. And of course, that's really more important probably than the CPU bump, and up to 1.4 hours better battery life. Then the Air would get the U Series, the Pro would get the H Series, and iMacs would get the S Series, and all with similar CPU performance improvements, varying GPU performance improvements.
Which is important with Metal now being the base layer for core graphics and core animation and all that.
Yeah, 41% better graphics would be a big, big improvement on the MacBook. Again, I don't notice this, but...
So the die shrink was a hard part. The die shrink for Broadwell is what made it take so long.
14 nanometers.
Yeah, and they're working on 10. How realistic that is. We're starting to get into like Ant-Man in the quantum realm at a certain point. But right now, just getting it down to 14 nanometers was supremely hard, and it caused all these delays and low yield rates. So my understanding is that Skylake is the architecture change on the same process size. So theoretically, and according to Intel at least, they've done the hard work, and this is more of the evolutionary step that gives you all the benefits afterwards.
When did Apple announce the MacBook?
March, at the March event.
March.
With the second Apple Watch.
And it came out in April.
Yes.
Although it was hard to get for a couple of months.
Anything that had Force Touch was hard to get for a couple of months.
I know it's a quick turnaround. They did it once before with the iPad, right?
They had to fix probably iPad 3... got them to Retina really quickly, but that GPU proved problematic in the field. And so getting an iPad 4 out was good for everybody.
I wouldn't be surprised to see Apple jump the gun on the MacBook. And
there's usually a Mac event in October, Leo.
Yeah. Wouldn't October be the time you'd do that?
Yeah, and I think that they might do it without any fanfare. You know, I mean, I think that that's one of the things that Apple has kind of moved on to with their desktop. You know, they just kind of, you know, it happens and now there'll be a little press release. There won't be any major announcement. There won't be anything else. It'll just suddenly just get a little bit better. I mean,
is there anything
else
would fix on the new MacBook?
You could price drop. Like one of the things they do is price drop the existing processors and then add either a lower cost or a higher cost option on top of it.
Here's what I would fix. Having used the MacBook now, this as my main computer for, I took it to Europe with me. Two things I would do. First of all, the camera on it is unconscionably bad. Yeah. I don't know why it's so bad.
So you want a Z-index on a lot of those cameras. They need the depth, and they made that so small with so little space that they couldn't... It would be very hard to get a better camera in there, but that's something that you know they traditionally work on very hard for future generations.
It may be that they just figure, well, if you need a camera, you'll buy a Logitech.
They couldn't even make the Apple logo glow. I mean, it is so thin that
way. And then it would be... I love Type-C. All you need is two. Just like the Chromebook Pixel does. Because then I love the idea that you could charge it on either side, whatever's convenient, and then the other port can be used for everything else. That's all you need. I think that would be sufficient.
Yeah. The design, the choice for this.
I think it should have six.
No, stop it. That's your weird. You're just a weirdo. That's the beauty of this. I got a card reader, a USB Type-C card reader. There's a number on the market. They're cheap. Fast. It's great.
You know what my favorite USB-C accessory is, though? My 16,000 milliamp hour iPad battery.
Yes.
Because now you go from this device that has about a 7 or 8 hour battery life to about a 17 hour battery life.
Because you just plug that battery into your MacBook and it charges.
It's a standard power plug. It doesn't care where its power comes from. The battery indicator might lie to you about its charging state. It'll be charging slower than off of your brick, but not that much more slowly. And just the ability to say, I don't care about power. I don't care about power outlets. I'm free, because I've got my brick.
I also find, unlike Alex, I was concerned about the lack of ports, as everybody was on the MacBook. That has not ever come up.
Maybe it'll be different when an eventual Pro comes out and I'm happy with a big brick. But I have to admit that there's almost on a weekly basis, I have situations where I'm using literally every port on my Mac.
You're so unusual.
Yeah. Everything is tied in. So the idea of giving that a lot.
To give us an idea, what is plugged in?
So typically I have... USB Pre 2 and 1 that has the audio.
An audio interface for...
That's my audio interface. Yeah. HDMI that goes out to an external either switcher or monitor on the other side.
Okay.
And then I'll have some kind of like mini recorder, on the, that goes into the Thunderbolt.
Okay.
I also use a Thunderbolt for my Ethernet connection. Andy was right. We still need a Thunderbolt. I still need Ethernet. And then I'll have a USB for another USB that I have one USB that's being used by the USB pre, and then I'll have a backup that is going to what's called a Magewell. So I have two different setups anyway. So that's...
This is not
you
typical.
Get the point.
And by the way, most of that could be done with one dongle.
If it does, yeah. And again, it concerns me putting all those things into one thing as well, that if it gets knocked out, then I lose everything. And so, it's one of those things that we actually are using these on the road in a way that probably is not atypical. So I understand that. From a pro perspective, like, for instance, there's little moves. Like, for instance, we've all not bought any new Retinas because they moved to ATI rather than NVIDIA, and a bunch of our apps won't work with ATI boards. And so suddenly all of our, we're kind of in a buying freeze over the MacBooks because
that screen on the MacBook is so far superior to the Air screen.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, and it's just the right size.
The interesting thing is, when I looked at the research, only between, just over 5% of people actually plug something like an external display into their MacBooks ever. So that wasn't a design choice for this. Apple actually sat down and said, what if we made a MacBook with no ports? And they said, well, we can't really charge it effectively. We got to have one port. And since we have to have one port to charge it, we might as well make it a multifunction port because, like Alton Brown, they don't believe in unitaskers. So they made it a multifunction charging NIO port. And then you're left with a MacBook with one port. And when you look at it from, well, it has too few ports for me, then yeah, absolutely. But that's why they have the Mac Pro. Right. When you look at it from, this is like a machine that could possibly exist in a universe where ports are no longer a thing, then it's like, oh, cool. This is a really cool experiment from a company that has enough money that they can do a really cool experiment.
I just, for traveling, it was so light. It was easy and it did everything I want. And when I wanted to go, to different parts of the ship and sit and do stuff, both Lisa and I brought our MacBooks. It was so easy. It was beautiful.
It's like an iPad that opens up.
Yeah.
I think the key to it is that this is an addition and an expansion to the MacBook line. This doesn't replace something that already exists, because it is kind of an experimental device at this stage. I don't think it's ready to take on the full burden of an iPad Air in the product line. Certainly not the full burden of the MacBook Pro in the product line. But you have nothing to complain about the fact that you live in a world in which the MacBook exists. Because if you don't like, if it's not appropriate for you, you still have all of your options available to you. I do think that though. If there's one feature, apart from fixing the camera, that they really want to do, it is to put in a second USB-C connector on there, because there is something about, you are down to 20 minutes of battery. Yeah. You have a camera card with pictures that need to go somewhere. Right. You are screwed with one. That's the one. Sometimes you can't be really you can't be seduced by the idea of, well, we did a poll and we did a survey and it turns out this feature is only used by 5% or 4% of the people, because sometimes it means that it's not used all the time. These are people who use it three times a year, but the three times they need it, oh boy, do they need it.
Yeah.
So that's the one feature that I think they should add, which is a second port.
Agree with you. I can live without a better camera, but a second port would be very, very nice. We don't know. High and Dry is asking in the chat room. We don't know how well any individual Macs sell, do we? We know the overall But Apple never reveals that.
People do product mix math, which is you never know how good it is, but they're usually pretty good at it.
Do we
it.
Know if the MacBook's doing well?
I think it's too early to tell. Traditionally, the MacBook Airs have been one of the most popular sellers because they're $900, like $900 basically, which Andy's talked about previously. This is a much more expensive computer. It's not really that my only criticism of it, and it's not a fair criticism because I know what it costs to make this machine, and it really is that joke about the first one costs $1 billion and the second one costs much less. But it's a perfect for computer for people, and it's currently priced too high for the people who would often benefit.
$1,300 at the base unit, yeah.
And the original MacBook Air was $1,700, and now it's $800. Right. So, I mean, these things go down over time. I just hope that that sort of goes quickly.
You get this computer under $1,000, it'll sell well. Yeah. It'll sell very well. This is, I mean, it's... And, of course, I did the upgraded version, which means it cost me a lot more. What did it cost me? $1,599. That's outrageous.
And you got gold, Leo?
Of course I got gold.
That's one acceptable color.
Of course I got. You know, Lisa. So we bought one for Lisa in gold, and I said, if you don't, because she didn't want gold. She said, I said, if you want titanium or whatever they call it, space gray or silver, just let me know, and I'll get that, and then we'll swap. And after about a month, she said, no, I think I'll keep the gold. So I got gold, too. It's even though we have the same exact laptop, it's been all right so far. The space gray is ugly to me. Silver just looks like it's another Mac. Gold looks like it's something special.
Yeah, I gotta say, I mean, going back to that so-called ugly phone you showed earlier, I really wish that there weren't such a consistent design language for Apple across all devices. I really wish that you could see at least one device in each product line where they really said we don't have to go with the same two types of metal, the same type of metal, the same three colors, the same rounded corners.
Actually, they did
match every single device.
The Mac Pro.
I'm talking about things like laptops and phones, things that are like more of your personal daily carry sort of devices. Because
you know, never really see the Mac Pro, really. I mean, it's
just put it in a backpack. I'm sure Alex has two of them in his backpack.
You can have a third one, Alex, if you want. I'll sell it to you cheap. My Mac Pro has never worked right.
You bought one early. You bought one right out of the gate.
No, I know.
You don't do that. You wait.
I've replaced it with a 5K iMac, and I'm very happy. It's faster.
Rev A boards, Leo. There's a thing about Rev A boards.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
That's weird. It really is weird that the iMac really is becoming the new Mac Pro. People just don't care about having the separate box and the separate everything else attached to it now. They really. It just shows you that how homogenized our needs for heavy iron computing has become. That so long as you have this one configuration, give me a really good screen, give me enough storage I can deal with it, give me some enough ports I can plug in external storage and connect me to a good network, and I'm good. There were a lot of people. I remember when the new Mac Pro first came out, there were a lot of people with pent up, you know, I've had this $5,000 for a new Mac Pro for the past 2 years, now finally I can buy it. Damn it, I'm buying it. But in the past year and a half, I mean, even people who are telling me what they're buying and also people coming to me for advice for buying, they are not – the Mac Pro is not their first choice at all. They need to – they're looking for a reason to get it, and they're not finding it. Now that they have this 5K display, this one box that just take it out of the box and be up and running and dancing in 15 minutes.
I have to wonder if the Mac Pro – how the Mac Pro is selling. It's such – I mean, and this is an example, Andy, of why you don't do really weird designs. You can't really rack it. You can't.
It's like a Lamborghini or a Ferrari. You know, they don't sell as much as a Toyota, but they're there.
It's so different when you have, again, the daily carry device. I love the sort that there seems to be sort of continuity between if you watch these movies on Turner Classic Movies and you see the top of a man's dresser and you see the gold cigarette case and you see the lighter and you see the fountain pen as they get dressed and they load in their pockets with these pieces of really finely crafted jewelry, and you can tell something about who this person is by what's engraved on their cigarette case or the fact that it's a Cartier enameled case and not something else like that. We look for a little bit of differentiation with this sort of stuff. That's why it's okay to have a case design that so many people are going to think is just plain ugly, but if you look around and you see that everybody has the same space gray rounded corners thing with a logo on the back of it, and you hear something that's more of a black with these beautiful with really dramatic slashes of color on it. I mean, I like Motorola stuff for a bunch of reasons, but I have to admit that one of them is that if you want to have an electric pink phone with purple trim and gold, you can have it. They don't judge. They just want your money.
You just described my new Moto G. It's exactly how it's going to look.
I'm serious. I am considering getting a Moto G or a Moto X after the announcements last week for as my personal carry. And but the only disadvantage is that how can I choose? And part of me will say I have never owned a pink phone. I've never owned a I bought my first pair of pink socks over the winter and made me think, why do I not own any pink things? And it's like,
I'm serious.
Tell that to Bret Hart.
This is a really good topic. I'm absolutely dead serious. I needed to replace the case on my Nexus 5 because the old one was finally like all worn out. And so I go to Amazon. You find here's a good like rubber case for $14 or $15 available in 19 colors. And I realize I'm just picking the same four color, the same boy colors I normally do. And I just wait a minute. Why am I not even considering the pink one? And so I bought the pink one.
Good man.
Specifically because I would never have considered it.
Because you're secure in your manhood.
Oh, it's not even that. It's a pretty color. It's lovely. I like having it. And so now I'm actually considering it. If I have the opportunity to buy an actual, like, you can't cover up the fact that this is a pink phone, maybe I would get a pink phone with purple highlights. It would be cool. I would enjoy having that on my desk or having that next to me, like when I'm having lunch somewhere. No one would mistake my phone for someone else's. And nobody.
Well, that's a good argument for it. Well, let's build Andy's phone. You want white or black front?
To match. Actually, I want the contrariness of black matched with the angry color next to the peaceful colors. I want a black front.
Oh, they don't have pink. They only have well, that's pretty. That's raspberry. Is that okay? No. They don't
it's
actually have
like lipstick colors now. They don't have normal names anymore.
There's okay, go with a raspberry.
Raspberry, okay. And then the accent, we can get pink.
There you go.
Oh, no one's gonna have that phone, Andrew.
I think that is legitimately cool.
Would you like a shell with this, a flip case, or no?
What colors?
Oh, we got turquoise, we got charcoal, we got crimson, we got raspberry. It could match.
I think the crimson offsetting the
crimson. It offsets the raspberry in a kind of an elegant way. Okay. And let me just engrave this with love from Leo. That'll fit. Okay, put that right. Oh, it's a little long. I'll just put love, Leo. It's a little.
That sounds like a reminder. How about hugs from Leo?
Hugs. There you go. There. Now, this is why you're the word smith.
Leo.
From Leo. Hugs from Leo. There you go. Right on the phone.
Would also okay. Make a great band name. Any listeners?
Hugs from Leo. And I'm gonna make you. I'm gonna get you the big one. So okay, there you go. We're going to send this off to you, Andy, but you have to use it.
Have to? I'm looking forward to it. This is going to be awesome.
All right. I'm actually going to get you that, Andy. I'll get your okay. – we'll have to – Lisa has your address because we send you checks, I believe.
I will.
Checks you never cash because I guess you're independently wealthy.
Because I'm in this for the love.
For the hugs.
All right. I'm sending you this phone.
Okay,
I'm sending you this phone because they're not. Look, it's $224. They're cheap.
There you go.
It's a pretty credible phone.
I'm looking forward to receiving that, and I will use it.
All right, I expect to see it, including hugs from Leo.
We expect lots of pictures of you with the phone. That's what we want. We want pictures of you like talking on the phone.
The squirrel and the phone, then just the phone, then the squirrel and the phone.
It actually has a pretty decent camera on it. I think you're going to like the camera.
They finally, yeah,
better than the MacBooks.
Oh my God. Mm. Oh my God, the cameras on the Motorola phones. Oh my God.
Mm.
It's like they finally realized that, oh, we knew the people take pictures.
They actually want.
Look, yes. They actually look at those pictures after they. Yes. Oh, damn it. Okay.
All right. I'm going to have to save this because I don't have your address here, but I'm going to. That's awesome. I'm so glad I could get you that. Renee? Pink phone?
Absolutely. And Andy and I will wear them with pride.
Alex?
Speaking of cameras, I saw this amazing. No, I don't pink. Know if I can tangent.
No, you're changing the subject. You're getting a pink phone, Renee.
No, that's fine. I would love a pink phone. I was just saying I saw this amazing demonstration of accessibility on the phone app, which I didn't know existed, but they were showing very low sight and blind people using the camera
yes.
app. And it was saying two faces in the picture, low light, good light, focus.
Oh, that's nice.
Or blurry. And then it would help them find the pictures Isn't again afterwards. Great. I didn't even thought about this technology. You know, it was an incredible demo.
We're going to have a huge revolution in photography, I think. Actually, Renee, no, I'll tell you what. I'll send you the pink phone, Renee. Alex, you're going to get this phone. This is the
yeah.
This is a Lego there. Phone.
Little jealous.
I'm ready.
Does that come in pink?
No. This is, comes only in utilitarian gray. This is we're looking at the Project Aura phone, and these are all the phone blocks.
I'm all over the Aura phone.
This phone is only available in gray.
Gray, because
the edges are not polished.
Well, no, it's part of the architect.
They jab into you much like time jabs away from your
photos function.
It does not receive any phone calls because you will learn nothing from the world. It's only there to be a weight, a pressing weight in your pocket at all times.
We'll have to go to Puerto Rico to get this for you.
I'll take pictures of me with using it. I'll test it. I'll get new plugins for it. I'm actually really excited about this phone. I think it'll be really cool.
Julep Totu in our chat room, and I think Julep came here just to tell me this, tells me 130 years ago, the color for baby boys was pink.
The word nice and bad. I mean, we're remarkably reversible people.
we're reversible. So I find that fascinating.
To go back to the phones for just a second, I was having a conversation with my grandmother, who's 94 now, and she was talking about the fact that I still have a phone in the house that has a crank on it. You know,
what?
Like that you ring.
Can you use it?
I posted it. No, it's not connected to anything anymore, but it's in perfectly working condition. And
this is Alex Lindsay calling Klondike 945.
Hello, Sparky. This is
Well, it's got the instructions on like what you have to do. And I was asking her about the instructions, and she said, oh, and she still remembered. We were one ring five.
Yeah.
And so she said you had to listen for how many rings happened on the phone to know whether it was your call or not, because it was a party line. And so she said, right, it was like, you know, you pick up the phone and you had it scheduled, and you pick up the phone and you'd be listening to the end of somebody else's call because you're all on a party line, and you had to, and there was this whole process how many rings and connections. She said it was a big deal when then we got one where we all had our own phone number. It was quite a thing, you know.
Well, think about it, because at the time, in fact, even when she got her own phone number, you had to have a separate wire for each phone. Yes, the only way that you could connect them was you have wire from your phone goes to the central office. So they had to put wires up for every phone. Now, of course, we have more sophisticated means. You know what that crank did, by the way? Do you know that? What that did?
Go ahead.
It started the gas.
It generated electricity. It was a little magneto to generate electricity, which would go down the line and ring the central office.
Right.
You
tell them you need to connect.
You'd send some electricity down the line, and their bell would ring, and they go, what is it?
Cool. Just imagine if you had to call like this. Before you called, you just had to go like this.
Like that, where everyone shared modems, and you had to have one modem per line.
Yeah.
Like we reinvent this stuff all the time.
At one time, there was some concern because, of course, in those days, they only used women as operators, and there was concern that if the phone network continued to grow at the pace it was growing, that every woman in the United States would be employed by the phone company. We figured out a better way before we had to go.
Once they start making their own money, then they're going to ask for the vote, and then they're going to
smoke.
Get representation in Congress.
Smoke cigarettes. It's the end of the line, my friends.
President of the United States.
So we actually have some news.
News?
We've just been having fun. And I haven't yet done one news story. Well, I guess the Intel thing kind of was. Apple, let's see, is a little, there's some concern, and I don't know if this is overblown or not, so I will let you guys help me with this one. This comes from Dan Gooden, who is a very good security writer for Ars Technica. He says, zero-day bug in fully patched OS X, that's our current OS X, comes under active exploit. In other words, there are exploits out there to hijack your Mac. Now, we're told the new beta of Yosemite fixes this, so obviously Apple's aware of it. It's a privilege escalation bug that comes from new error logging features Apple added to OS X 10.10. And it comes from additions to the dynamic linker, DYLD. Security researcher Stefan Esser discovered it. Now, remember, we're going to hear a lot of this kind of stuff, and some of it will be scare stories because DEF CON and Black Hat are going on.
Yeah, he didn't discover it. He made it public. It was previously discovered and disclosed to Apple, and then he decided to make it public.
Oh, interesting. So Apple does know about it.
Yeah.
Malwarebytes wrote about it. I'm not fully sure I trust a company like Malwarebytes to report these things in a sensible way because, of course, I would guess they're a well-known anti-malware program for Windows. I would guess they're branching out to the Mac world, and this is conveniently timed. But the researcher at Malwarebytes discovered the exploit when he noticed that a piece of malware or junkware that he was installing, vSearch, something like that, modified the sudoer's configuration file. That's the file that lets other people escalate to root. And if you see your sudoer's file modified, that's a little bit of a cause for a concern. So it's a script. That means shell commands now can be executed as root using sudo. I know it's not supposed to be pronounced sudo. It's just so tempting. Sudo, I think, is how the Unix gurus pronounce it.
I want to make them angry, Leo.
The sudoers script. So once that happens, the script uses their new password-free permissions to launch the VS installer app. That's put in a hidden directory on the installer's disk image, giving it full root permissions, and then from there, you're pwned. Now, can this be done remotely is the question, and perhaps it's a little unfair to say that this can happen from a drive-by attack. In other words, going to a website and getting attacked without your knowledge. But one has to worry. You know, it was just disclosed once again that bad guys have put bad payloads into the flash on Yahoo Ads.
Beyond the flash itself.
Yeah. Flash itself is the problem.
Yeah, if you can execute code outside the sandbox, it's a problem. And it's when you hear people write about how it could be executed from a website, you're talking about if you have a website with malformed code that is designed to take advantage of another security problem and another deployment.
It has to take advantage of your OS's flaw.
Yeah, it's not like you're not going to go to Gawker.com and be punished for going to Gawker.com by getting a malware installed in your
whether
Mac.
Whether you should be punished by going to Gawker.com is a whole other question.
Yeah, you should be.
I had a little time to look into it before the show, and there's a couple things that I think are worth pointing out that aren't always pointed out here, and that is that, yeah, patches are important, but patches are one line of defense for stuff like this. So there was a vulnerability that was discovered. It's a privilege escalation, which means it already has to be some mechanism on the computer for the privilege to escalate from. So it's not a direct remote attack. But, you know, there's things that are in place that Apple has to try to prevent these things from getting on the machine, even though the machine is vulnerable. Once they're on, like, for example, I believe this one, they've already revoked the certificate for the malware that's trying to install itself. So Gatekeeper will tell you that it can't be installed and you have to go out of your way to install it now. I believe they've also added the signature to their automatic malware protection system so that if it sees any of this stuff showing up on your system, it will block its access as well. And then there's stuff like the Mac App Store so that you're downloading things from trusted sources to begin with, or downloading from Microsoft.com or Adobe.com rather than weird web software.
I'm sure all of us are turning, have Gatekeeper turned on, at least use the middle setting, which says only from the App Store and signed developers. That'll help you from, you know, if somebody emailed you this exploit, for instance, you'd keep you from running it from the email. The issue still is that if you go to a website that can take advantage of a hole in the OS, you still are vulnerable.
Yeah, or a phishing attack or spear phishing attack.
Well, that's what I mean. A spear phishing attack isn't going to get you if you have Gatekeeper turned on, because it would have to draw you to a site that took advantage of a flaw in an OS 10.
Freeawesomegame.com. Click to download.
Yeah, right.
And it's also a problem with targeted attacks. And people assume that you're talking about the government here, but you can also talk about people that you know who have a reason to have it in for you, including like you're not aware that your spouse is aware that you're cheating on him or her, and he or she wants to start collecting information to make the negotiations go very, very smoothly indeed. These are the things that make it very, very easy for someone who has just 5 or 10 minutes worth of physical access to a device to just do nothing but plant that one bug, and now you've got complete ownership of it forever. without anybody knowing about it. So it's a big problem, and it is. But it's also a reason why, you know, here's part of the hidden advantages of using Apple stuff, both phones, tablets, and notebooks. They make it very, because they have such control over all their hardware, and they have such control over the pipeline from Cupertino to their users. It's very, very easy for them to push out these updates the moment that they decide that it's important enough to deal with, and they actually manage to get a patch out there. Other devices, it's kind of harder. Microsoft is very, very good about security as well. I think they're kind of on the same par as Apple, but on mobile devices, it's just a nightmare to get have these things addressed as quickly as Apple can deal with them.
But this, to be clear, is a Macintosh a problem, and starting on Monday, researchers were seeing exploits in the wild, so it's out there. On the other hand, the good news is 10.10.5, the latest beta of 10.10.5, does fix it. What's your advice? What should people do right now without 10.10.5 on their machine?
All the stuff Steve Gibson has been recommending for years, like don't download things from untrusted sources, don't click on links, don't think that if someone's trying to offer you something for free, it's probably not really free. And then you trust your gatekeeper settings, set them so that if it's not a trusted developer, it doesn't let you open the application. I mean, make it as hard as possible.
That's the default, by the way, the middle setting. And everybody should turn that on. If they've turned it off, turn it back on.
I would not disagree, but I would speak in defense of not using Gatekeeper. I don't think I don't want people to get the impression that's a stupid thing to do, because there are a lot of developers who just simply have problems with the amount of control that Apple puts over their content. I think that the money thing to do is if you're trying to do something that's a little bit squirrely. Like if you're on this forum, they say, hey, why buy this game? I can give you we got this free copy of it right here. Or why pay for access to this site? Because I've got this code that lets you get on this site for free. It is probably a way to deploy something nasty to your machine and stay far away.
Suspicion is always a good thing. Yep. Gatekeeper, the middle setting, I don't have any problem with. It means you can still download from a website. If the developer hasn't taken the trouble to get a certificate, you can still open it. You just have to command click and say open. But it's not just only that, one extra step. You know, and Apple will say, are you sure? Because we don't know who this guy is.
I love what Apple has done to implement this. It's almost as if they know how people work. Yes. Because if you have it turned off and now you've downloaded something perfectly fine from the internet and it blocks it, it will just simply say, well, okay, we know that you've set your app this way. Instead of turning the feature off completely, would you like me to make an exception for this one app right now? And then you don't have to turn it off and then forget to turn it back on again. If that one app you've downloaded is a problem, then that's a problem, but chances are it's not. And like I said, it's great to see the human being inside the developer of the operating system saying, no, that's the most logical thing is to turn it off, but people are going to find a way to forget to turn it back on again. So we have to deal with the frailties.
And they also, I think, have done a great job with this, and it's completely transparent to the user, this malware removal and a tool that you mentioned, Renee. It's automatically updated. There's no update request. It just does it. And Apple's able to quickly respond to things like these zero-day exploits.
Yeah, because even when they do make a patch, there's no guarantee how fast anyone's... Once they release it, it's still no guarantee how fast anyone's going to install it. So things that can be done server-side are always much faster.
I don't keep it on the strictest setting. You could do that. But if you go to security and privacy in your system preferences, the default is allow apps... It's at the bottom part there. Allow apps downloaded from Mac App Store... and identified developers. In my opinion, that's sufficient. I don't think you need to do the Mac App Store only.
And I think you should be very suspect of anything that isn't an identified developer. I mean,
it should be something
you
went out and you got it, and you knew
what
you were
doing. For me, it's beta apps. Like, and I know the developer who's giving me the beta.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think it's sufficient warning. You know, look, there's no way any operating system could protect a user against herself completely.
Yes.
If you're determined to do stupid things, you're going to do them.
Right.
So I think putting in a speed bump, and it's a pretty good speed bump.
And there's several now. There's like four or five along the way.
That's really all you can expect any OS to do. The real worry, of course, is these zero-day flaws that don't require any user intervention. That's, by the way, what this flaw is. If it's weaponized, put on a website, the website can take advantage of a flaw in your operating system and inject this software. And apparently there are sites trying to do that right now. I think that... do you guys... Any of you use a Mac antivirus?
No.
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 In fact, the latest recommendations from security experts is that any viruses, because of 0 days, any viruses aren't particularly useful. They give you a sense of false sense of confidence because
and the things that they want, like they make demands, like they want certain privileges from Apple to be able to do deeper, deeper access themselves. But they'll open you up to. I mean,
they often are in a virus in a way themselves.
I would much rather that Apple and Microsoft and Google handle their own security.
Now, here's one that's even more concern, although less and more at the same time. This is not something in the wild. This is not something that's out there. Researchers have created a firmware worm that can even attack air-gapped Macs. Now, we've known about, what is it called, Thunderstrike?
Yep.
This is Thunderstrike 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
There's got to be some music.
But this, in conjunction with the flaw we just mentioned, you know, one of the things that they could, if they could get this privilege escalation, install arbitrary software, they could in fact install this. It installs into firmware. Scanners don't ever look in firmware, another reason why an antivirus is useless. And then when you did things like plugged in a Thunderbolt connector, Thunderbolt has a place to write to. On the connector. They write the worm to the connector, and then when it's plugged into other devices, it infects those devices. Much as a floppy in the old days could be infected and passed
Sneakernet.
Around. Well, Sneakernet.
And this is very related to the USB. Is this very similar to the USB?
It's similar to bad USB, although it takes advantage of a flaw
option ROM.
In EFI. Yes, option ROM is what it's called. Yep.
And I think that we can thank, actually, the U.S. government for... Really,
probably
making this possible because this is the technology that we use in Iran for Stuxnet is to hack the firmware, and so that this has been really pioneered by our own.
And government. I'm proud to be an American.
And it's also why a monoculture is a bad thing. You know, we were talking about innovation and different stuff. Part of the reason this worm works is because the EFI that's used by Apple is also used by PCs, and this is actually a modification of an attack that
same
affects
reference platform.
Dell and Lenovo because they all use the same reference software exactly. So a monoculture is a bad thing. It's a little diversity would be a good thing.
Battlestar Galactica taught us this lesson, I feel like, Leo, and we just haven't learned from it.
Yes, we should all be like Galactica with have to ring central when we want to make a call. The demo that the researchers showed, and they're going to, again, this is a black hat, I think. Maybe it's DEF CON. Used an Apple Thunderbolt to gigabit Ethernet adapter, probably something similar to what Alex Lindsay uses.
Yep. That's exactly what I use.
Yep. Infecting the option ROM on an external SSD or on a RAID controller. Nothing, no security product currently checks the option ROM on Ethernet adapters. There's a business opportunity, ladies and gentlemen.
Or a platform opportunity to encrypt the firmware and firmware updates with signatures.
Well, one thing we've seen, you know, this USB flaw, bad USB, has been around for months now. No one has modified how they make USBs. None.
Yeah.
We just say, okay, we're going to live with it.
Well, I think modifying the firmware on the device is something a manufacturer could do where USB is a standard and probably goes through that glacial phase.
Yeah, no, it's because they're including EEPROMs on USB. They're electrically erasable read-only memory. And so you could easily take that out. The reason they leave it on is so if there's a flaw in manufacture, they can blast new firmware into the USB device. But they could take that out. That probably costs some money, believe it or not, to include. And to my knowledge, nobody has done that. It's like chlamydia. We've just decided to live with it.
The good news about Thunderstrike 2, though, is
what
that
do you mean
breaks
we?
On.
Okay, TMI there. Okay.
10.4 breaks Thunderstrike, the proof of concept at least, and 10.5 might break it more. Again, they're aware of this and they're modifying things to sort of prevent these sorts of attacks.
I do trust our Apple overlords to fix this stuff fairly quickly.
Yeah. Well, some of the coverage, it feels like a tech reporter wakes up, reads the black hat,
I know.
Speech things, and then just makes the crazy. Like the headlines that killed me was like, your Mac is vulnerable and you don't even need to be on the internet for it to happen. And it's just those headlines don't actually explain that it's not that it's not an internet thing, because it is an internet thing, but it's that it's also a sneakernet thing. So your air gap doesn't have. Like, just take the time to explain it rather than throw the headline up there.
Is Hockenberry writing for you now?
We have a series of guests. So what we decided to do when Serenity came on is do a series of guest columns where we could get like community voices. So we try to get as many people from the community to contribute articles whenever they can. And Hockenberry was kind enough to contribute this one.
Love Craig Hockenberry, Furbo.org. And he wrote an article called Apple Pay to the rescue at iMore.com. Last week, I received an all-too-familiar call. One of our credit cards had been used to make a fraudulent transaction. And, of course, that's a case where his spouse or he was using the credit card for reals, not an Apple Pay version of that. He was curious, what happens when your credit card is canceled, because it had to be canceled, a new number issued, what happens to your Apple Pay? It still works.
Yeah, updated automatically.
That is pretty cool. The bank does that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a process in place for the, I don't know if every bank does it automatically, but
this is a Citibank card.
Yeah.
Wow. So he didn't have to get the new card, do the long involved process of registering that card on his iPhone and then his Apple Watch. It just happened.
Yeah, and because the Apple Watch is the way that Apple does the security, it's decoupling your actual number from the number token that it generates. It can just update the one on the back end, and then it can just start generating new numbers. So it was pretty cool because he thought that maybe there was just a gap in how long it took to cancel the Apple Pay credit card, but then he got the message and saw that no, it's been taken care of for me.
Really nice.
And if you've ever had, like I've had compromised cards before, it's a nightmare to start updating everything.
No, that's a pain in the butt. Oh, mine are compromised every few months.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to admit, the more I use Apple Pay, the more you get sensitive to the fact that how insecure your credit cards are. You know that it's just something that, you know, without the biometrics and having to give out a number and all those things, I start to want more and more. I'm not at a point yet where I say I wouldn't shop somewhere because it doesn't have Apple Pay, but I could definitely, if it became prevalent enough, I could definitely make subtle choices. I already choose, you know, Walgreens over, right, you know, the other ones,
CVS,
because they have a, you know, or CVS over.
No, you choose Walgreens over
CVS.
Yeah.
You know, there's
CVS
Walgreens
doesn't
and there's,
do it. Yeah.
Because they're all down the street a couple blocks. So
that's
I can
Choco
make a choice.
Says. He says, I'm actively choosing Apple Pay places. And you got to think it's more secure, although, I mean, it's not inconceivable that somebody could somehow figure out a way, most likely be involving hacking the bank, not you.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, you've got to feel that's more secure than handing somebody your credit card number.
Or my card has NFC on it because we pay for NFC with everything. Right. And if I accidentally drop it and drive away from the gas pump, the next three people in line can get gas on me because there's no security mechanism for the card.
Right. You don't have to enter a PIN.
No.
No.
If we're over $100, they stop you.
Right.
It depends. Like some places stop you at $60, $70, $80, but over $100, you can't use it. But still, under $100 is a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Like a tank of gas.
Yeah. McDonald's.
Yeah, no, that's
why I love that dollar menu. It's great.
I'm saying I fed myself. I was at the Boston Comic Con on Saturday, and I fed myself all day with my Apple Watch. It's like the coolest thing in the world. It's like it's just short. You can, if you're a little bit self delusional, you can make yourself think that, oh no, this is Andy Anatko. He never has at Panera. Andy, your money is no good here at Panera. We insist. Here you go. Bacon turkey broth and a large soda.
You know what you need? You need a Nico Girard Pinnacle watch. It's two watches in one. A high-end Swiss watch, and on the other end, the Apple Watch. Swiss watch?
Alrighty then.
Apple Watch.
Oh my gosh.
You know the problem, though? If you want to use the heart rate monitor on the Apple Watch, you've got to put it up, face up. Nobody will know you have a Nico Girard.
You got to hand it to them. They found a way to make the stainless steel watch even more expensive. I didn't think it was possible.
It says be uncompromised. Well, I guess you could say that. compromise.
But tell me, if you want to buy this as on the basis of, well, I spent $500 for the stainless steel bracelet for this. What if I make this into this is like a $420 bracelet for the Apple Watch that also has another watch free with it.
It's got two watches. Incidentally, $9,300. It won't be available. It's going to take you about a year to get it.
Well, and the problem is that once you start charging your Apple Watch, now you've lost the other watch as well. I mean, you know, I don't think this makes any sense.
There goes my
at all.
Pick of the week, guys. Thanks.
if only this made as much sense as Apple's $10,000 watch. That makes perfect sense.
Well, this is twice the watch.
I might point out there is a gold version that has the gold Apple Watch along with a gold version of the Pinnacle, $112,000, Andy.
Okay, Kanye needs watches too. Stop being mean.
I need startup capital, or I want to go on Shark Tank. I've got this brilliant idea for a premium watch product. It is a $50,000 watch, and you get it, and you arrive in the box, you open the lid, and for 10 seconds, you see a bundle of $20,000 before it just burns into ashes while you watch it. I think that the watch collector would love to see
it
that.
Sell
just
well.
To see money just burn into cinders and getting nothing for it. Well. And has a pretty good Omega watch in the box. We wind up with a really good Omega watch. But I think what people just like is knowing that this sign that says that I had the ability to simply set fire to $20,000 and not even care.
If it's not enough of a douchebag,
I'm a bit of a horologist. Just add, you might say.
Yes, you're a horologist. All right. Good Sound in our chat room says it takes it one step further. You'd have Android Wear, Apple Watch, Tag Heuer, a Cartier. Why not just go all the way around? You've got lots of wrist space.
To be serious, I was actually thinking about this about a month ago. I'm wearing the Garmin Vivo smartwatch, which is hard to activate when you're doing it the wrong way. But the battery's dead. Yes, the battery's dead. Okay, but given that you can have fitness and notifications on a thing that's about this small, this is the size of the actual electronics that's in here. Wouldn't that be a cool product? Just have an actual watch band that has that part of it, so you can wear whatever watch you want, and just simply add smartwatch features to
it into the band. Yeah,
I mean that would be a product that I would actually consider buying.
That's an interesting idea. Now you need to go on Shark Tank.
I want to go on Dragon's Den.
Dragon's Den, the original. I'm not going to do some derivative version.
I think that Andy on Shark Tank would be awesome. I think we should definitely push for that.
I'm just not sure if I could even for like $2 million for 20% of my company. I'm not sure if I could debase myself to do the sort of presentation they train you to make for Shark Tank. Hello, sharks. Are you ready to go surfing in your sofa?
He's a natural.
Take my money, Andy.
Mark Cuban's going to love you.
The one time they drank that whole bottle of cough syrup, they went right to bed early. And that's when Nighty Night Bear was born.
I'll buy two.
But I think you should make one. The key is you should just be a caricature. You know, so the thing is that you have to come up with the – like if I did Shark Tank, I would definitely be as serious as I possibly could and come up with the most zany idea and just know that if they – you know, that we're just going to take you down this path and I'm going to – build a bunch of stats. I'm going to do a bunch of things. Now I can't do it.
The real game is to get past the producers.
Tastes like an apple.
Exactly.
Call it the lapple.
The lapple.
Here's actually, a lapple martini.
iBookery in our chat room has a good idea. I take an iPad and duct tape a Surface Pro to it, and you've got Windows, Mac.
Yeah, there you go. Dual boot.
Dual boot. Yeah. It's a new way to dual boot.
One of those spinner toys like that makes like the bird be in the cage. So if you put like heavy duty cord, you could actually make it look like it's actually running iOS and Windows 10 at the same time. All I need is $1 million in startup capital for 5%.
Our show, Andy Yannacco, ladies and gentlemen, Chicago Sun Times will be here all week. Our show today brought to you by Lynda.com. We love Lynda. And I think probably MacBreak Weekly is the perfect show for Lynda to do ads on because I know you guys like to learn. Many of you have hobbies like photography, Photoshop. Maybe you want to develop iOS apps, learn HTML5, or maybe you just want to make yourself more marketable so you can get a new job or ask for a raise. LYNDA.com is the place to go to learn with more than 3,000 on-demand video courses, always up to date. You know, when Windows 10 came out last week, had new Windows 10 Essential apps. That's because they work with the publishers to make sure that when the new stuff comes out, they did the same thing with Final Cut. They're ready to go. If you're interested in photography, a lot of us are. There's Ben Long. I think, Alex, you must know Ben.
Great, I do know Ben. He's great.
Great guy. Love him.
Absolutely.
That's his course on the foundations of photography composition. It looks like he's in a forest fire. But anyway, that's what's cool about this. I mean, these great videos by not just, great teachers, but people who are experts in the field. Ben's a pro photographer, right? There's a new one, the DIY photographer. Joseph Lanashki does it. This is kind of fun. You can learn how to make a macro lens or a light diffuser or a camera stabilizer just for a few bucks. It's so clever, and it's kind of fun. This is one you could do with the kids.
New and course. A lot of these guys are guys that I've worked with.
Oh, they're pros.
And yeah. They really are the guys that you want to hear this from. You know, I mean, these are definitely the pros that you're getting. And I think that not only is it, there's a lot of platforms similar to lynda.com that just can't quite get the quality of the show, the organization of the process, and the right talent together.
I agree.
In the way that Lynda does.
Yeah, she's nailed it. Yep. And you saw the top-down shot. I mean, they shoot this stuff really, really well. These aren't YouTube videos. These are really well made and very affordable. You know, you pay one monthly fee, you have the run of it, so you don't have to even decide what courses you're going to take. You can take any number of courses or look at little bits of individual courses. They have a great transcriptions for everything, so you can search right into the course and find the little bit you want. New courses just came out, Adobe Camera Raw Essential Training. Enhancing images with photos for OS X. See, they've already got photos, videos, and kind of high end too. Enhancing images with photos or Photoshop CC Essential Training, stuff like that. I'm a fan. I love Lynda.com. Anything you want to know, you can learn. And I think we love to learn. And there's certainly great reasons to do it. Here's the deal. Lynda.com's membership gives you unlimited access to training on hundreds of topics with the best teachers, beautifully shot for one low flat rate. And we're going to get you 10 days free so you can really get a sense of what Lynda.com could bring to the table for you. It's a great thing to have. If you're a business, having a Lynda.com account is huge. We do that because there's always stuff that our staff wants to learn. LYNDA.com/MacBreak to try it free for 10 days. The run of the place. LYNDA.com/MacBreak. Did you read the Popular Science article on iTunes and matching? I thought this was kind of interesting. It was based on work done by Kirk McLaren. How do you say his name? Something like that. On how iTunes does McElhern, I guess is how you'd say it. How iTunes does matching. The original Apple iTunes Match did fingerprinting, right? It would analyze the song and come up with a unique fingerprint that was pretty much the way. I don't know whether they're using a hash or what, but there's the way to say this is unique. This is the live version of the song, not the studio version, that kind of thing. But apparently Apple Music has broken all that and is only using metadata.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. Well, it's risky. So yeah. CDDB does this too. CDDB doesn't do fingerprinting. I think probably because it's computationally intensive. They will. But on the other hand, remember CDDB is identifying a whole CD or a whole recording. So it will look at the lengths of each song in there. And that generates a fairly unique fingerprint. But frequently, at least in my experience with CDDB, when you put a CD in and you say identify this, it'll say it could be this or it could be this. So this kind of metadata matching is not perfect, far from it. And I guess Kirk has discovered that when you're doing it with music, there's a lot of potential problems. He used a piece of music from a disc of Bach chorales, changed the metadata. It was BWV 418 von Gott will ich nicht lassen. He changed it to Can't Feel My Face by The Weeknd. which is a bestseller. Apple Music matched the file, deleted his local copy. He waited for Apple Music to match the file, deleted his local copy, downloaded it from the cloud. What did he get? What do you guess? He got I Can't Feel My Face by Weeknd, not Bach. Now, iTunes Match would have got it right?
Theoretically, yeah.
Yeah, it's
hard to track because he did the original post. There was some errors that were happening server side on Apple. He did a second post and a third post. Serenity, I think, spent 2 days trying to see if she could duplicate the errors and couldn't. No, so I mean, it's really complicated at this point. And I'm going back to, well, you know, this service is launching and there's significant things that need to be fixed. And
why would they change how it works if they've got a working system?
It's a different system, and there's different constraints when you're doing music that you own, and it is always right in either a downloaded state or an uploaded state to music that you are streaming that might be bookmarked, that might be downloaded, that might be removed from download, but still bookmarked. So they have a lot of different constraints, and if you have a very particular workflow And remember, like, Kirk's going out of his way to break it with this. Like, he's deliberately changing metadata and he's deleting tracks.
Right.
And that could absolutely happen to somebody through the normal course of operations, but it's not the typical scenario. And
more of a concern with me would be, and Susie Oakes, who is an editor at Macworld, had this problem, a live show being replaced with a studio recording.
Jim had that problem too. Like, he has three, he wants three different versions of an Aussie song. He doesn't want, like, Apple thinks it's being clever. Like, people will complain if there's duplicate versions of music, so we'll just automatically make sure there's no duplicates. But people like Jim, they don't consider those duplicates. Those are variations and they want every single one of them. And there's a lot of edge cases. Maybe it's a popular edge case too that Apple Music is just not considering right now.
Anybody want a mule? Because apparently some guy just walked by the studio with a few mules.
Mules?
Mules?
I have a.
Is that Apple Music's fault too?
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I guess he's on a pilgrimage.
There is gold in this podcast.
Now you know you're in
badges. Now we don't need no stinking badges.
I know. Does he have to get some chicken and eggs? Some eggs, some butter.
What?
With his mules.
This is a strange town. Aren't you glad you left, Alex?
I'm alerting Sam Steele in case he tries to cross the border.
That was the best part of it. The best part has been there've been mules going down the street. I mean, that you don't see that in every city.
You don't.
That's all I'm saying.
But I do have to apologize. The mules are the new squirrel. Mules! What were you saying? I did get a little distracted.
There are edge cases that Apple obviously didn't consider and needs to take into account when they do their updates.
Mm-hmm.
This is just why I cringe at even the innocent use of the word edge case, because
we're all edge cases now.
So not edge case. Like they thought that they were doing everyone a favor by not doing duplicates, and that does not, in a world where there are many variations of music, that's obviously not a good thing to do.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of stuff that we're not going to learn about the development of Apple Music until lots of people retire from Apple. Because like any large-scale project, there's this long list of things that they want to get done by launch day that they can't get done by launch day, and they have to defer. So it does seem really incredible that it wouldn't do something as simple as saying, well, okay, this user is telling me that this user's data is telling me that here is American Pie, but it's saying that it's 2 minutes and 12 seconds long. I have never seen I know that American Pie is like 80 million minutes long. This can't be the same thing. And it's like, this couldn't possibly be a match. This shouldn't be a match. And that's things that you really hope you only see in a version 1.0 of a product, because it should not be a thing where people don't. I'm sure that inside Apple, they did consider what happens if you have, for instance, something as simple as you've got, there are a lot of Beatles fans who have the stereo version, the stereo mix of the Beatles album, but also the original mono mix that was actually approved by the Beatles. Because you got to know that everybody who's working on this at Apple was throwing their own music libraries at it. So, and these are not people who have, you know, just only buy stuff off of Apple Music. Or off the iTunes store. So it would be really, really cool to hear that story years from now about here is what they couldn't fix, and they realized they're not going to get this. This is a complex problem with a nonlinear solution. We're not going to be able to fix it by ship date, and we got to ship by this date. Yeah. So let's keep our fingers that this doesn't cause the.
Yeah, the fundamental thing I think that is kind of in the medical community is there, the first thing is do no harm. And I think that the idea of deleting things, you know,
that's,
I think
harm.
If I'm not sure whether I should keep this or not, I should just keep it. Like, that was the fundamental error there, is deciding that we're not, you know, we're going to use metadata, which is going to be less accurate. And then we're not, but we should, until we're absolutely sure this is working, we should just not delete anything. And even if it stacks things up a little bit, people would complain about that, but a lot less than, you know, losing their music. Which is why I have to admit, mine never did match, because I have so much complex audio from my radio days and everything else. I just didn't even know how it would deal with that, and I just never went down that path.
I still go back to the same thing I think about Apple Photos and iCloud Photo Library, is that you should just never touch user data. Once you make one of these new cloud services, you take the existing library, you put it over here, then you put the new cloud library next to it, and it works like a Delta file. So everything in here is looked at as a change. The user doesn't notice that. They just get a unified view on the end, and that way things can happen in that Apple Music library. And you can even wipe it if you decide that things are out of control, you bookmark too much, and your core data is never touched unless you personally buy something and add it to that or upload something. If there's an express user action involved, and that to me, it seems like that would just protect user data, which is the most important thing. If you complain about duplicates, that's not a destructive complaint, that's annoying. But if songs are gone, that's a destructive complaint. That's your precious data taken away from you. That's the kind of stuff we have to avoid.
And once again, I think the best way to create an interface between a piece of software or a service and a user is to allow the user to take responsibility for their own mistakes. People are not going to be upset if they realize, I wanted the live version of this album. Why did it give me, that's because I've got like three different copies of this and two of them are duplicates. Okay, well, that was my fault. I'm a bonehead. What they don't want is to have a service without beyond their control and without their approval making a change to improve your life, and they're improving your life the wrong way. As year after year, no matter what it is I'm testing, the thing that gets me and the only thing that really gets me enraged is when a software, service, or device makes a decision for me. It is the wrong decision consistently. It doesn't ask me beforehand, and it doesn't allow me to override that decision. That's why there are certain device shaped holes in the drywall here in the office.
Well, if I just told Siri to call Andy and it automatically called. Like right now, if I say call Andy, it'll say, do you want Andy's phone, Andy's home, Andy's business? And that's annoying, but I can pick it. If it just chose which one it was going to call Andy at random, that would be infuriating.
And I couldn't say, oh, I'm sorry, Siri, I actually meant this. But what's actually infuriating is when if I do something like I won't use the trigger word, but for so many different services, message Renee. Like, let's see, I know I've got four phone numbers for Renee. Only one of them is labeled as a mobile number. Maybe you should try to send the text message to Renee's mobile number and not to his two office numbers or his phone number. I don't know. That's what if I were writing this as an Apple script, I would probably guess that the user meant a text message.
And then I get those AT&T emails for 3 months afterwards.
Yes.
So this would be, it might be an apt time to say that if you want to turn off your auto renew on Apple Music, because you're getting a free trial until, you know, October or late September.
Objection, Your Honor. Counsel is trying to lead the jury.
How would you? So you go to iTunes. You could do it on your phone. I'm on iTunes on the Mac. You go to your account. You go to your account info, subscriptions. I won't enter the password again. Once you get into subscription, you could show it. Once you get into subscriptions, you'll see managed subscriptions. At least on my machine, Apple Music is at the very top. Auto renew is on by default. You could turn it off that way. You continue with the free trial, but you could decide later if you want to ever pay for this solution. Maybe you don't. Yeah. I like iTunes Match. I'm going to keep that one.
I love iTunes. I love Apple Music because, again, like my use case is simply, hey, Siri, play me whatever music I happen to feel like, and it just plays it for me. And
yeah,
I'm
that's pretty
in a magical
cool.
world.
Yeah.
But I have no existing library. I'm the opposite of Alex.
Right.
No existing library.
You got nothing to lose.
Be damaged. Yeah.
This is the sort of thing where I have to preface by saying I'm not being sarcastic. The fact that I started with an absolutely empty library with no music of my own, and I just simply added stuff directly from Apple Music, it works great for me with that library. It's only when you're trying to make it work with your own music that you brought into the relationship before you even met Apple Music that Apple Music gets a little bit petulant.
It's for the millennials.
Issues with Spotify where, you know, it would like look at your local one and then suddenly that song wasn't there anymore. And you know, I just stopped doing it. So in Spotify, I know that my expectation is that it's not touching, you know, it lives in its own little subscription world, not in, you know, not looking at any of my local content at all. And then it works fine. So I think that in this, you know, apples to apples, or whatever, oranges to oranges, I think it probably works fine.
Yeah. The really sad thing for me is that I find myself a couple of days ago, I started looking for alternatives to iTunes. That if I could only have one app that does nothing but manage my local music library, and it doesn't know anything about Apple Music, it doesn't know anything about any streaming services, and I could just simply deal with and manage my own playlists on my own devices with this one app, but then go to Apple Music and treat it like the Spotify app or whatever, my life would be so much better and so much happier right now.
Have you found anything?
No, I've found a couple that are kind of nice. Most of them tend to be nostalgic in nature, saying, "Remember iTunes 4? Remember the last version that worked perfectly? We've just completely duplicated iTunes 4 in every way."
I've been using Vox. Have you tried Vox?
I downloaded that one. I wish it were less like a mobile app and more like like the desktop version of iTunes.
Yeah, the problem with iTunes, as Marco Arment and others have pointed out, is it's trying to do 1,000 different things. So what Vox is really it's an MP3 player, right, or an AAC player.
And all kinds of other formats.
And I use it for the high-res music playback. They have added this new feature, and I haven't really tried it because it's not free. You do get a free trial called Loop that lets you use cloud-based storage for your music files, syncing between the Mac and iPhone in full quality playback.
Yeah.
So
What I'm missing is it's an actual enjoyable creative thing to be sitting in front of a screen that has all my music in it and build playlists and manipulate playlists and update things. And when I get new music, decide, do I want this? I just bought the latest, it's a really great live recording of Mozart's Abduction from the Seraglio. And now I'm listening to these like 43 tracks, including recitatives, and thinking, well, are there five arias in here that I'm definitely going to want to put into different playlists? And that's actually fun in deciding that, well, this one is a really, really fast-paced aria. I actually want that in the peppy music playlist. I want that to appear sooner rather than later. And it's that stuff that you really can't get with iTunes, or I'm hoping that I can find it with a third-party app now. I would hate to think that I do have a Windows 10 notebook in the office that I had to acquire for a whole bunch of testing. I would hate to think that I moved my music library management off of the Mac entirely and onto Windows only because there are better music library apps there. I don't know that for a fact yet.
Well, actually, Microsoft's own Groove Music, it does the same thing as Apple Music. It's a streaming solution, but you can use your existing songs within it. The problem is, just like iTunes, iTunes is cross-platform, but Groove, I guess you could use Groove on the Mac. One of the things that somebody suggested in the chat room, and this is true, is if you have a Microsoft Office subscription, as I do, you have unlimited storage on OneDrive, you can move all your music to OneDrive and stream it and everything, and it's done.
Yeah. It's hysterically funny. At this point, I've got my entire music library, the real version of my music library, not every single track I've ever ripped, but the 6,000, 7,000 tracks that matter to me. I've got complete copies of it in three different places in the cloud, only because storage is so cheap. And rather than keep these things synced from one to have a cross-platform situation, it's much easier simply to have an entire copy on Amazon Music, an entire copy with Apple, an entire copy with Google, and just simply whatever device I have, whatever it wants to work with the best, that's what I will let it work with.
Well, I'm going to volunteer. I'll pay for a loop, which is $5 a month, and let you know there is no streaming component of that. There's no unlimited music. This is all about your music, but it does stream your music to an iOS device. As well. So, and I don't, the Vox player, you're right. It's a very primitive, simple player.
I think that's the point. It's just not what I'm looking for.
Yeah. On the other hand, that's one of the problems with iTunes. It's not simple.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's somewhere in between. NQ, Songbird, which is now Nightingale, I guess. That's the open source solution.
And if anybody listening has like a favorite like that, again, I'm looking for a desktop music library management and playlist app that is as pretty as what I consider what iTunes was before it lost its way, or better than iTunes, but focused strictly on local music management and playlists.
Look at Nightingale. I mean, I think it's not as pretty because it's cross-platform.
Yeah.
A little bit of a issue. But this is free. Oh, it's open source. So I don't know. I don't know. All right. Nothing from the peanut gallery at all, huh? You guys are just going to keep using iTunes for the rest of your life.
No, I have this magical dream where Apple is building a new application side by side with it. Eventually replace it.
God,
is get rid of iPods and Windows and we'll be fine.
I will say I
have to fix it about once every 6 months. I have to fix my dad's connection to his iPhone and Windows, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like I do not know how anyone could use iTunes on Windows. I mean, I'm sure that it's better than what the other ones are, but it is. If you think that there's any problem with the Mac, just use.
Oh yeah, just try using it on Windows. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's insane. Like
this is one of those magical times. When I imagine that. There are people inside Apple who are as sick and tired of iTunes as we are and have written their own apps that they have no intention of releasing. It's just on their own MacBooks. And at some point, somebody's going to walk by, see this like on the 27-inch screen in somebody's conference room and say, what's that? said, oh, well, that's just something I had together. No, it isn't. That's iTunes 12.
it's not going too far down a rabbit hole, but we're just complaining about the front end. The front end is light years ahead of the back end, and they've got to solve a back end problem that runs off web objects that serves billions of dollars in transactions.
They're still using web objects?
Sure, look at the URL and hundreds of millions of credit card. No, I mean, they have got, it's like you have this tower that is incredibly rickety, but everyone is living in this tower and it's super important, or a bridge, and it's the only way to get in and off the island. And you've got to very carefully build another bridge so that nobody, like nothing breaks on the original bridge while you're doing it. It's a non-trivial problem to solve.
Non-trivial. Can you run Groove Music on a Macintosh?
Came out for iOS this morning.
Yeah. And it's Microsoft's former Xbox Music, formerly Zune Music. it does have the largest library of anybody, I think larger than anybody.
Does it have Prince and Neil Young?
I don't know if it has Neil Young. He pulled his music from all the streaming solutions, didn't he?
Yeah, and so did Prince.
Yeah. It says web, PC, Xbox, iPhone, Android, and Windows Phone. So you couldn't use it as a music manager on a Mac, but you could use the website to stream. Yeah, this seems like there's an opportunity here. Somebody in the chat room suggests J River Media Center. I've used their J River software on the Pono. I'm not crazy about it.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, I got at least $20 to spend on a really good music player. If it's a really good one, I'd spend $30.
Okay. There's the challenge. $30 waiting for you.
So as Renee says, I'm not looking to buy the first copy. I'm looking to buy the second copy. I want to make that really clear.
Yeah, I think the hard part is that between the different things that are available, I think the way I look at it is I just don't know how financially viable trying to do this with the players that are already there. It just seems like a very crowded market with other advantages. And I know that we hear that when they said you couldn't do a phone, you couldn't do a watch, you couldn't do it. But at the same time, there's so much advantage to having it tied in across these platforms and everything else. I think that, we have to hope that Apple's able to do something with it, because it's be very hard. I mean, as someone who has developed software, I wouldn't even look at that market there's no money. It's a consumer market, number one, is so that there's no advantage to being a vertical. So there's no, price advantage. I can't charge $300 for it because there's not any people are going to use it. I have to charge five or maybe 30. But even at 30, you have to have incredible penetration to pay the bills. So that's the unless someone does it as a serious hobby, there's
no money in it. Some billionaire gets really angry at iTunes.
Exactly. That's what we need. We need Richard Branson to say, I've had enough.
Elon Musk has to do the Tesla.
Elon Musk. iTunes. Exactly.
That's true, because now we got three crazy billionaires building their own private space fleets. Clearly, they've got $10 million to make us a really good music app.
If they had their priorities in order.
Just let us use your rounding error to solve this problem of music management on multi-platform.
What are you going to listen to on your way to Mars? You've got to fix this problem.
Exactly.
And I think the other issue is that it really gets into, we can complain about all in an esoteric sort of sense that we're frustrated with everything else, but for the most part, my playback, whether it's on Apple Music or Spotify, is good enough. It's not like I get frustrated with it. They should do this a little bit more. But it's not like I don't find it to be this. There are definitely things that drive me crazy, and that's just isn't one of them. I think that's probably the case for a lot of people, is that it's mildly perturbing, but not enough to make them really frustrated by it.
IBM, this is a hell freezes over story. IBM is moving its employees from Lenovo to Macs. No ThinkPad for you. IBM says they may buy as many as 200, between 150,000 and 200 Macs, 100,000 Macs every single year. Of course, IBM is in a partnership now with Apple to do iOS apps. But wow. Wow.
The world changes.
That is, Steve Jobs would be amazed to hear this. IBM moving.
And do we think that this is anything to do with the security issues that Lenovo had earlier in the year as to whether IBM is?
I think they were using the Lenovo just more for nostalgic reasons, because, of course, IBM sold the ThinkPad brand to Lenovo. ThinkPads were the greatest. And I think the Lenovo ThinkPads, which never had this spyware issue, only the consumer grade laptops did for Lenovo, are still really some of the best PC laptops made, certainly for business. So it's a big shock. IBM Vice President Fletcher Previn says he could see half to three quarters of IBM employees eventually leaving their ThinkPads and converting to Macs.
Google's a huge Mac shop, too. I mean, it's not insignificant anymore.
Well, Google gives every new employee the choice, right, of a Google Chrome OS Pixel or a MacBook or a Windows laptop. So it's up to the employee.
Can't think of a time when I saw a Google employee with anything other than a Mac.
The point is, they could if they wanted.
Yeah. Choice is there. I mean, you see it every once in a while, but it's like.
You know why I use it? One of the main reasons I use a Mac, which is very kind of not why other people use a Mac, is I like it that it's BSD Unix under the hood, and I get a command prompt.
I like being able to open up the script. I mean, I probably open up the terminal a couple times
a
day.
Love the terminal.
Certain things. And so I think that it's the terminal is great, and being able to dual boot, you know, to get into both is important as well.
All right, let's take a break. Come back. Your picks of the week coming up. But first, a word from LegalZoom.com. I said this in July, but I guess August is National Make-A-Will Month. Because we're in August now, and it says it's National Make-A-Will Month. So I jumped the gun. Your job this month, if you haven't made a will, Jason, do you have a will? You have children.
I do. Actually, 5 years ago, before I even worked at Twit, we used LegalZoom to get our will.
Yep. As soon as you have kids, you really got to start thinking about making a will. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't have a will, then what happens to the kids is kind of up in the air. The courts end up deciding. Same thing with your property, all right? So make a will. It's very affordable and it's very easy. In fact, since you did it, Jason, I think they've made it even easier. They've got this great kit that you get, the forms and everything. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but there are things you don't need a lawyer to do, like protecting your loved ones with a legally binding will, starting a business, trademarks and patents, all of this stuff. LegalZoom has a better way for you and your spouse to take control of your family's future. They also do powers of attorney and trusts. And if you need some help, don't worry, because even though LegalZoom is not a law firm, they have created a network of independent attorneys in most states. They've got pre-negotiated flat rate, so it's not going to cost you an arm and leg, and you can talk to somebody. It's really awesome. LegalZoom.com. Use the offer code MBW on checkout, and you'll save if you have an assignment this month. Take advantage of it. LegalZoom.com. Make that will. National Make-A-Will Month. LegalZoom.com. And don't forget the offer code MBW to save. Time for our picks of the week. Let's start. I always like to start with Alex because, you know, he's usually got the high-end pick.
Makes all the rest of us seem cheap.
The watch with two watches, something like that.
I was going to pick that, and then you guys made so much fun of it. And then I made fun of it. And I was like, oh, now I'm
better not pick that.
No, so I have been two things. One is just a really quick website that I think people might enjoy that I really enjoyed. It's not a Mac thing, but have you seen Fiverr.com?
Fiverr?
Fiverr.com. Yep.
Uh-huh. What does it do?
And I just used it. So it is basically like this, the stock market of having stuff done for you, whether it's video and animation or graphics and design. And you know, I had as an experiment, I've been thinking about having like little cartoon heads made of all of our people, you know, all of our employees. So I sent, you know, I had mine sent out and
I want this one. I will rap a 16-line verse song about anything you want.
Yeah, exactly. But there's, if you look at the more normal ones, which are like graphics. I could be a Heisman. If you mean
attachment, I can do advisement. Yes, I could be your winner. Taking dinner. Okay, put your shirt back on, kid.
Yeah.
$5 though. He says for $5 he'll do that.
Yeah, and so what I did, you know, you can do stuff like, but you can, like, if you look at graphic and design, you can have logo design
logo.
Or illustration
yeah.
or yeah. anything else. Now, it starts at $5. Admittedly, if you want to add little features like it going a little faster or it being used for commercial use, it gets up higher. I think I spent $40 on having my little head thing done. And but the interesting thing about this is that it's
wait a minute, say that again. You had a little head thing done.
You know, like I took my picture that I always use, and he turned it into a cartoon.
Oh yeah, I saw the ad on Facebook that you could turn your picture into a cartoon.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you do that?
I did. I don't think I have it anywhere.
Post it on Google Plus. It'll okay. You could be the last post on Google Plus ever. You can get a radio ad made. Oh, here's one, yeah. Alex. I will submit your single to 10,000 major radio stations.
Right.
Oh, here's a guy. Here's a guy who's selling. I will promote your business to my thousands of listeners for $5.
So, like, this is, hold on, I think I have.
I think that's illegal. I don't want to say anything, but.
Okay. Hold on, how much is that in blow?
Oops, we just broke Fiverr.
So, this is the, I don't have a better way to show it right now. Hold on, let me see, maybe I have a better way. Hold on.
Don't go there now.
Here we go. So, this is the cartoon that.
I like that.
You know, it was fun.
$5? No, $40.
$40 okay. To have it done. But you know, and, you know, it was a guy, and, you know, there was a fine artist in Pakistan who was putting that together. And so anyway, but I thought that it was a, but you're going back and forth with him. And I had a couple corrections, and he gave it to me on an EPS file. And it was like, you know, for the amount of time it would take to do something like that, it was actually really good. And so anyway, the Fiverr is kind of a fun one if you're looking for something, you know, that, and we're just experimenting with it, but it's pretty cool. My Mac solution, or my MacBreak real one, is I've been dying to get rid of my wallet. Like, I just can't. The idea of carrying a phone and a wallet have been something that drives me a little crazy.
So are you going to hire a person to walk 10 feet behind you carrying your wallet?
No, they're going to carry the case. They're like, you know, my little case of the stuff I need every day. I'll have those people, you know, pull that case behind
me.
A little rolling
suitcase.
But in my personal wallet.
You need, like, you know, in Veep, you need a bag man.
Exactly. Yeah, no, exactly. So So have you seen these Sina cases? So these
that's pretty.
Yeah.
Look at that. A little.
It's like a wallet that holds your phone.
Yeah, exactly. But it's got just enough for a couple credit cards and my license.
It's pretty.
But the thing is that this was enough. And now, even though it's a little bulky around my phone, it is enough that I'm no longer carrying a wallet. You know, like, I keep the wallet, like, in a bag, in my backpack or whatever, just in case there's a couple extra things in it. But for the most part, just being able to kind of get this, you know, this just kind of solves that.
Nice.
That problem. And you can throw it and it doesn't break your iPhone.
What does this have to do with Fiverr?
It doesn't have nothing to do with
this. Is this another pick?
It was the second pick. Fiverr was supposed to be like this quick thing, and then we started talking.
Oh, okay.
And there was nothing about that.
I get it. Pick number two.
I had this made for $5 on Fiverr. I did not have that done.
So they make iPhone. Do they make it? Is it just for iPhones? I'm looking here. They have iPads, iPhones.
Yeah.
iPhones, iPads.
They're nice.
iPads, they're iPhones. Pricey. They're pretty.
But they're very pretty.
And oh, look at these. Again, are gorgeous.
Yeah, this is like really a kind of upscale.
How much are they?
They're not that expensive. How much I spent.
They're not that expensive. $30?
Expensive. Yeah, something like that.
You get fancy and spend more, like the Folio 7 for an iPad mini is $80, but for a phone.
But I got to say, for me being able to just walk away from my wallet was exciting. So,
so a phone case that's your wallet. Lisa uses one of these.
My wallet and I just don't have a very good experience.
No.
I find it to be a pain in the butt.
Somebody needs to reinvent the wallet. It literally is a pain in your butt. I have sciatica from my wallet.
Yes. No, I decided I needed to get away from it. And I keep my phone. Part of it is I keep my phone up on my Scotty vest is sitting right here. So I tend to keep my phone right here as opposed to my back pocket where I don't put my phone.
They make folios. I bet you they make folios for the MacBook. Here's the Galaxy S4. So yeah, they have a broad variety of things. A MacBook folio would be nice. A little sleeve. Very nice. Okay, that's Sena, Sena Cases .com.
Lots of good stuff.
Renee Ritchie, you got a pick for us?
I do. So my pick, last week I mentioned briefly that Panic had released Coda for iOS, which is a fantastic, terrific app. And this week they released an update to Status Board, Status Board 2.
I love Status Board. It's so silly.
It's silly, but they find such a way to make, to me, it makes these devices more than what I consider them to be. They're almost like aspirational products. And what their original pitch for the original Status Board was, if you had an old first generation iPad that you weren't doing anything with, just hook it up to a monitor and use it as your office status board, because it's way cheaper than getting some sort of dedicated office board, you know, contraption. And now they've updated it and they went to great pains to sort of allow for upgrade pricing and to make it give you options for more boards. And it's just one of these delightfully designed Panic apps that make you think you can do more with this technology. So this, that you can run JSON scripts to give you graphs about how different products are selling or the tech issues you have with them. It can pull in Twitter feeds or RSS feeds. It can have who's in the office and who's out of the office. And it's just all this really, it's like notification center for your entire office or home. And again, it runs on your iPad. You can plug it into a television via HDMI. You can stream it. It's a fantastic, if you have extra hardware running around and if you don't want to spend money to get some sort of dedicated board, but you think you'd benefit from it, it's a terrific way to make that all work for
you. It's not cheap. What is it? How much? 50? 40?
Yeah. I mean, they're not one of those companies. They're more like Omni, and they want to have good value for the software that they provide. But there is a version of upgrade pricing on this, which is nice. And you can get different versions of it. Like the original, there was a lot of pushback on the original status board because the update was a $50 in-app purchase, and their thinking was anyone in business is a no-brainer because it's meant to run in your conference room. It's meant to be
it's
for
an
companies.
Executive dashboard. Yeah.
Yeah, that spent thousands of dollars without even blinking an eye. But because it's panic, everybody wanted it, so they adjusted the pricing, and they're sort of doing another step on adjusting the pricing now.
I love it, and I haven't seen the new one, but I use the old one all the time. I love it.
My second pick, and this is just more so we address the issue because everyone is asking me about it, is there was a rumor about Apple becoming an MVNO, reselling broadband to everybody around the world and making it so you never have to deal with a carrier again. And it got everyone really excited. But Apple's been exploring that since 2005 or 2006, and you could write that story any week and it won't make it any more imminent. So if that is your dream or aspiration.
Same thing with the Apple TV, right? John Petrikowski had the rumor the Apple TV will be out in September.
Oh, that's true. The Apple television, this is like the Apple television where, yes, they're working on it and exploring it, but it is not something that is an active product line. The Apple TV is coming. We've known since before WWDC.
I bet it's done. And they're just waiting to make the deals. It's all about the content deals.
I think the deals have finally been decoupled and they're just going to go ahead with the box now.
So you believe, Petchkowski got, of course, he's very good. You believe that's true, that September will be iPhone and Apple TV.
And I agree with some of the rumors that it doesn't matter. I don't think that those deals are what they need. I mean, 4K, SDK, those types of things would be enough to get most people to upgrade.
Yeah, Apple A chip. The new interface hasn't leaked yet, which is kind of cool, but a lot of the rest of it is leaked.
Okay. Oh, good. Well, thank you for the clarification on that. Mr. Andy Anatko, your pick of the week.
This weekend was a really good weekend for spotting the International Space Station because obviously it's always flying overhead somewhere, but it's not always flying overhead your part of the United States. And it's also not always flying overhead at a time where you are awake. And it's also not always flying overhead in a place where it's actually above the trees and above the hills where you are. This is a great – on Sunday and Monday night, you could see the ISS really easily at like 8:30 – or excuse me, in New England at least, at 8:30 at night. And then Sunday night, you could see it at like 9:15 p.m. Perfect. So it's dark out. So you can take pictures. The next night it showed up at 8:30 something p.m. So it was still enough light that you couldn't get a picture. And what you want to have is you want to have this app. It's called ISS Spotter. And all it does is it just simply keeps plotting the current location of the International Space Station against an actual map of the world. So you can see that right now it's about getting close to Chile and South America. Of course, it's Bolivia. So you can actually see... you can tell it where you live. So I've got like Boston marked here as my home. And so you can actually see it when it's approaching. You can actually see the track that it's coming to. And you can also see that are you going to have to face north? You're going to have to face south because when it comes, you'll be in the sky for about 4.5 minutes. It's there and it's gone. It's easy to spot because it is easily the brightest object in the sky unless there's like a full moon. But you have to know where to look, especially if you're setting up your camera. So if you already know that the ISS is coming, this is the thing to keep next to you on the sofa as you're waiting for the time to actually go outside and start peeping up at the sky. NASA actually has another calculator that will tell you what times it's going to be passing overhead based on your location. It can also send you email alerts. But this is also cool because not only does it have this live view, but also you can actually hit this one right here, and it will actually show you here are all the times that that's going to be passing overhead, along with like a 1 to 4 star rating as to how good that viewing is going to be. So here's the elevate. So yeah, more information, but let's get back to there. Once again, I'm not trained on operating my iPhone upside down.
I don't blame you.
I'm using Crane Cam 3000, the future video podcast, which has many great benefits, but upside down operation.
You need a mirror or something to
exactly. Yeah, I need a Vogel array. But yeah, so it's easy to see that. Oh well, actually, here are one stars, which means that they're not going to be in the sky for very long. Plus, they're going to be low on the horizon, so you might be able to see it. The other money feature is that you can actually set an alarm. So if you go into preferences, you can actually tell it, you can tell it to. There we go. You can tell it anytime the ISS is going to be at least this far above the horizon, so long as it's going to be within some time of the day that I'm going to be actually awake and looking up, or only at night, so it'll be easier to see outside of the sunset or whatever. Actually give me an alert, give me an alarm, so you'll actually, like, you know, get a notification on your Apple Watch that, hey, in 5 minutes or 10 minutes time, go into the backyard because there's a spaceship visible that you're going to be able to see. So, and all of this, and this is a free app. There's in-app purchases where if you want to give them $1 or $3, they're perfectly happy to let you do that. But man, it's a unitasker app. It does that one thing perfectly well. And both nights over this weekend where I really wanted to get good photos of the ISS, it was so easy because I had this app just like at my hip pocket at all times. Beautifully, beautifully made.
What's the name of it? ISS?
It's called ISS Spotter.
Spotter.
By Media Pilot.
Andy Anako, thank you. My pick of the week is just buy a share of Apple stock. You'll thank yourself later. Apple's.
Hello.
I'm not actually joking. We are not allowed to give you stock advice because I'm not anyway, because I'm an idiot. But Apple has lost.
We say that every week.
Yeah. $100 billion dollars in value in the last 2 days. And while I don't understand any of this, apparently it broke through a technical support level, so it's expected by stock nerds to go lower still, maybe down to 110 or less. And, of course, as anybody who watches this show knows, Apple had the best quarter it's ever had every quarter for the last 10 years. So...
Didn't someone show a graph that says it doesn't matter that Apple's price goes up and then down and then up and then down regardless of what's happening in the rest of the world?
Isn't it bizarre?
I think one of the things that Apple has done fairly effectively is every time their stock drops by a lot, they do a lot of buyback.
Yeah, this is a chance,
right? Which helps prop it up, but it also it gives Apple a big discount and slowly buying their stock back.
I have to think that Apple's long-term future is bright. And if you could get Apple stock, which peaked just a few days ago at $132 per share, if you get it $110 per share, it seems like that would be a good idea. But I'm not giving you stock advice, and I certainly don't own any Apple stock. Because I don't buy tech stocks for many very good reasons. My pick of the week this week, Blab.im. We talked about it and played, in fact, showed it a little bit before the show. This is a really interesting idea. Comes from some of the developers and people behind Bebo. Remember, Bebo sold to AOL for a lot of almost $1 billion. And then AOL sold it back to the founders. Bebo was a messaging system that was very popular around the world, but never really. It kind of got subsumed by WhatsApp and others. They've changed a little bit, and now they're doing something using a technology Alex has talked a lot about called WebRTC. And I liken this to kind of it's much like Meerkat and Periscope, but like Hangouts. So you can have up to four people in a frame. You can all talk. It's really incredibly easy. They're still going. I started this. There they are before the show, and they're still going.
Neil,
let me join in on this one. You see how easy it is.
I'm going to reject this call.
Oh, don't reject me, Brittany, please. All right, now I'm in the Blab. What's cool about this is you got a chat room going. Actually, it's on the left here as we look. Did you just move that? It used to be on the right.
Oh, are you mirror flipped again?
I'm mirror flipped again.
Oh, that's good.
And it's easy for people to join it. There's this kind of nice feature where if you like what somebody's saying, you click the hands to give them feels. Anybody who's used Periscope will recognize this feature. And it's free and it's easy to use. It's at blab.im. They've released a beta version of it for iOS, for iPhone. I shouldn't say iOS, for iPhone. The way you get the beta version on the iPhone is you go to blab.im. In your browser, and you'll get to download it. And I find this fascinating. How many, do you know, Brittany works for the company. Do you know how many shows there have been? I mean, you only launched this a few months ago.
Oh my gosh, FurCon would know how many shows exactly.
Yeah, but it's lots.
Yeah, it's been pretty active. We haven't found a time where there's nothing on air right now, and it's really great. Our whole community, we have founders of like over 2,000 startups who occasionally jump in, and there's moments like how you found out when someone just tweets
somebody
at you
tweeted it, and I went
blog.
In and I went, whoa.
Yeah. We're like, what kind of guy just clicks a link? Someone tweets at them. We're like,
this guy.
That guy.
Yeah. Anyway, very interesting. And I feel like in some ways it really democratizes what we do, which is the multi-headed talking heads chat show, so that anybody could do one. I really like this. Yeah. I don't.
So Sean just jumped in and said there's about 200 blabs a day.
200 blabs a day. I think that might go up very quickly, very soon.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Our servers are up for the challenge.
Alex, tell me, by the way, Alex thought you might be using Amazon. Is that correct? The Amazon Cloud?
I think that's not correct.
Oh, okay.
No, no, and I said you could do it with Amazon. I'm not saying that you need to. So, you know, as far from a broadcasting
your
perspective.
Your buddy JJ's calling in.
Yeah. This is LL Cool L. JJ McCool. So this is kind of an interesting, I really think this is fascinating. And I feel like, now Alex, WebRTC is a Google technology. It's free and open to use, right?
Yeah, I don't know if there's been a lot of people that have contributed to it, but it's a very open platform that allows folks to really design what you're seeing there, you know, where you don't have to design all the underlying connections, and it's being supported by Chrome. It's supported on Chrome and Firefox. Is it? I don't know if it's supported on Safari or not.
It is not working on Safari because Safari doesn't support WebRTC.
Yeah.
But Firefox and Chrome both do.
Yeah, and so it allows point-to-point connections that are very, very low latency, high quality. And so by being supported directly into the browser, it just makes it really easy to build these kinds of – not easy. I mean, there's lots of things about it that are hard. But it definitely makes it more fluid as far as creating these kinds of protocols that don't require plugins, that don't require a lot of extra stuff to make it work.
This couldn't be easier. It's very much like onboarding of Meerkat or Periscope. You just go to blab.im. That, by the way, is Sean. Sean Puri is the CEO of the company. He's joined us in the lower left. You go to blab.im. You feed it your Twitter login. You give it an email address, and then that's it. You're done. You can also tweet. It's very much like Periscope or Meerkat. I feel like more like Meerkat. It really feels guerrilla and fun. And boy, you can see how well it works. This is. Kind of amazing.
Our CTO is actually jumping in the comments, and he said we use AWS and our own data center.
Amazon. And plus your own data center.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Very cool. So blab.im if you're interested in trying it out. This is kind of against my own better interests, since it, after all, does exactly what we spent $1.5 million to do here in the studio on your laptop or your phone.
The competitive advantage is not the technology. The competitive advantage is you.
Good. You. Okay.
You got $1 million voice.
Actually, I want to play with this. I think I could see us using it, just as we used Hangouts sometimes. I could see us using it. And Alex, you're the king of Hangouts. Is this the same codec, Alex, as Hangouts uses and all of that?
I think it's very similar. I don't know precisely what everybody's using for this, but it's a very similar codec, and I think that probably the quality. I think one of the
things is
control over it. Yeah, so I think that a lot of that stuff can be switched on the back end if they wanted to provide more quality.
Furquan and Sean? You guys could turn up. In fact, you might want to think about doing a pro version where you could dial up the quality a little bit, given that you would know what kind of bandwidth individual users would have.
Right. I mean, the cool thing is. What you did with Twit, which was no TV station could ever cover technology in the depth and breadth that you do.
Or would want to, apparently.
Well, but there is an audience for it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like I gave our team this example. I said, Amazon sells more books than Barnes & Noble ever carried.
It's the long tail.
Right? The long tail is extremely powerful. And I said, whether it's sports or it's finance, there are content junkies out there who can't get enough.
Right.
And who knows where the great talent's going to come up from? We don't need to decide top down. Let's let the talent bubble up to the top, and let's let people create little talk shows about what they're interested in. And democracy, I think you said a little bit earlier, that's the right word.
That's what it's about. It does. I tried it on the iPad. Does it work on the iPad?
The app, the iOS app will work on the iPad as well.
Okay, so you can do this on iPad or iPhone, blab.im, if you wanted to install it and play with it. And I expect a million shows to bloom. Thank you, Brittany and Sean. I appreciate it.
Thanks for jumping in.
For Kwan, who's in the on the left there in the Twitter chat.
I don't know if you noticed, your after show has been going on for two hours.
Well, I was showing the website and said, oh, they're still doing it. So we just joined. Brittany took it over. That's another interesting thing. It's easy to add people and have people leave. You just click the X in the box or boot people. Although I notice because it's Brittany's, only she can boot. Apparently, when I left, you were able to take it over, Brittany. Is that because you work at Blab, or would that be just how it works in general?
I had to start a new Blab.
Started a new Blab, okay.
Yeah. Okay. People can squat in it, but you can kick them out to make sure.
Yeah. So, very interesting. Blab.im. Thank you, everybody. Yeah. Sean, Brittany, Kwan in the chat there. Thank you, JJ McCool. We are now even, right?
I know. I think we are finally even.
Because I invaded his Blab yesterday. I'm going to come in your Blab tonight. You watch it.
I'll be watching for you.
We had a couple of tweets saying, can Blab handle the Twit army? So we'll see if Twit Nation overloads us or if we can handle it.
I think you guys have some servers on demand there because it seems to be rock solid. We tend to break stuff. But
we've always wanted to helicopter in servers. So something we want to do.
Thanks, guys. See you later. Bye-bye. Bye. So that's my pick of the week. Kind of an interesting idea, I think. See, I left, so my seat is now open, and I can continue to watch. And that's the other point is people can continue to watch as it continues. I like that T-shirt. Those hands mean I feel you. I feel you. Alex Lindsay is at the Pixel Core. You're going to be back next week, I hear.
I will via Rwanda. I'll be in Rwanda next week. So
nice.
We'll show you whatever is new there when we get there.
Very nice. Look forward to that.
Yep.
So next week from Rwanda.
And most likely, if people are following me, I'm known to meerkat from Rwanda, and I probably will do that again. I don't meerkat a lot of times. When I'm here in the United States, most of my life is an NDA, except when I'm on the show. But in Rwanda, usually I can put I'm going to be attaching a phone to the car and driving around and stuff like that. So it should be fun.
We should mention, by the way, and this seems to be going on right now, that there is a cell outage in much of the United States. AT&T and T-Mobile both are suffering outages right now. So anybody got AT&T in the audience? Is it working? Are you seeing bars? Something to be aware of.
And I have both AT&T and T-Mobile, so in Pittsburgh it seems to be fine.
Yeah.
And there's hail in New England, so I keep looking up, making sure Andy's okay.
Wait a minute, you got hail in July?
We've had some really bad. We had some tornadoes. There was a huge storm that took out a whole bunch of the city's power in northern Rhode Island. A couple of people got killed in New Hampshire when a tent collapsed because of a storm over the weekend. Yeah, really bad.
Actually, to expand this, it apparently is not just AT&T and T-Mobile. It's all wireless, all the big wireless carriers in the U.S. Verizon is also suffering at this point. That worries me a little bit.
Is this a hack, or is it a...
Well, golly, do they all use the same backbone? I don't know.
Or a sunspot.
Yeah. Nature's getting cranky.
There's Verizon's outage. That's kind of limited to the southeast, although Los Angeles is suffering a little bit. AT&T's same area. Interesting, isn't that? AT&T's spreading. That is a little scary. Coordinated fiber cuts could do it. Pretty hard to do that in software, I think. The fact that those are in geographically similar regions. I don't know. We'll continue to cover that story, of course, through the day. In fact, Security Now is coming up. I wouldn't be surprised if Steve will be on this as well. Thank you, Mr. Andy Anatko, Chicago Sun-Times. He's in a hell of a place. New England.
It's good to be indoors, Leo. It's very good to be indoors. Outside is not a safe place for milquetoasts such as myself.
And well, not to mention that big, bright fusion ball up in the sky there. That thing's scary.
Stupid day ball.
I hate that day ball. Rene Ritchie, he's balmy and relaxed in beautiful Montreal. Where the meat is smoked and the women are beautiful.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Renee, for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Leo.
All right. Thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can join us live in the chat room if you want to be in the studio. Just email tickets at twit.tv. We love having you. Got a nice studio audience today. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. You can also get it after the fact, of course, on demand always for all of our shows. In this case, twit.tv/MBW or wherever you subscribe to your favorite shows. We're on all the platforms, including, of course, iTunes, Apple's podcast app, and a variety of really excellent Twit apps written by our third-party developers on every platform, iOS, Android, Windows Phone. Thanks for being here. Now, back to work, because break time is over.